Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to the September the 26th regular meeting for the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission. And we'll now call the meeting to order. One second. Agenda. What agenda? Oh, oops. I see it. Sorry about that. Okay. Sorry. So we'll pause for our invocation, then we'll proceed immediately into the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity to be able to gather today, to be able to serve our community, to make decisions for the betterment of our community. We ask that you impart a spirit of collaboration, cooperation, and mindfulness upon each of us as we make decisions. And from this, and you ask that we guide us and make sure that we make the best decisions for our community as a whole. These and all things we ask in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Might need to just back out and go to the
page.
Okay. All right. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, then adjournment. For each agenda item on a regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for the public comment. If you wish to comment on an item the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give to staff. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the raise your hand feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. And we ask that you also unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if you are in person, fill out a speaker card, and you will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. Just for general housekeeping, we ask that you all silence and or mute phones to make sure that things can be recorded and captured clearly and there's no disruptions. And we also ask that if you hear something that you don't like or you hear something that you do like, you maintain your comments to yourself. Don't do the outburst as yay, no cheering, no booing. And please minimize your conversations amongst each other. All right. Thank you. So we move into the approval of the agenda.
Cole's motion to approve agenda.
We had a motion to approve made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah. There's no discussion on the motion. We'll entertain a vote and we'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries and the agenda is approved. Next, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There are none listed. The next item on the agenda is items requested to be removed from the final agenda. Now I'll read those items for the record. One is comprehensive plan future land use map amendment, 505 East 54th Street. That petition number is 23-004-628-ZA. Two, zoning map amendment at 505 East 54th, a rezone from a RSF 6 to a RMF 225. Petition number is 23-004-627-ZA. And then number three, zoning map amendment at 9965 Ferguson Avenue and 10001 Bethesda. The petition number is Z-0823-000406 MAP.
Cole's motion to remove items 1 through 3.
No, it's second.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries and the items have been removed. Next item on the agenda is item requested to be withdrawn. There are none listed. Now we move into the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and for which no known objections have been identified nor anticipated. Any objections raised at the meeting will result in the item being moved to the regular agenda. We have one item on the consent agenda, and that is the approval of the August 15, 2023 MPC meeting minutes. Is there a motion to approve?
Cole's motion to approve the consent
agenda. No, a second.
Motion made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah to approve the August 15th, 2023 MPC meeting minutes. If there's no discussion on that motion, we'll do a voice vote. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries and the consent agenda is approved. If you are here as a member of the public or online as a member of the public that was here for an item that was removed from the final agenda, and or on the consent agenda, those items have been either removed and or approved. So if you can stay at your leisure or go at your leisure to go on with the rest of your day. All right. That brings us to old business. That item is a map amendment, 9 parcels on East Broad Street, Gwinnett Street, and East Bolton Street. Petition number 23-001408-ZA. Mr. Morrow.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the Metropolitan Planning Commission. Today you are going to hear about a petition to rezone 9 parcels located at the intersection of East Broad and East Gwinnett Street from the TC2 zoning district to the small plan development zoning district. So today's format is going to be just a little bit different, just to kind of address what have been some irregularities with this particular petition. First, I'm going to talk about the nature of the request and specifically parcel ownership. And then I'm going to get into the requirements of the small plan development. Generally, we're going to look at what's required for a general master plan and for a permitted uses list or a PD text. Then we're going to look at the actual submissions that were received, and I'm going to offer a recommendation from MPC staff for moving forward. So first, just to kind of cover the basics of the request itself, this is a request to rezone the subject properties from the subject 9 properties from TC2, traditional commercial to small plan development. The development is proposed to consist of 2 mixed-use buildings, both with ground floor commercial and 200 upper story residential units that are proposed for rent. Staff at this juncture must note that petitioner has the ability to achieve a similar development in the current zoning district. The traditional commercial zoning district does permit ground floor commercial uses with upper story residential uses. And it has been staff's assessment that this is an attempt to somewhat subvert the requirements of the zoning ordinance, again, by mixing and matching things that would be development standards from other zoning districts under the guise of a planned development district. I'll also note that if the petitioner were to take the parcels as zoned, to combine them and to develop the site as an apartment building, there are approximately 1.2 acres under his control at this point. And doing just a very rough measurement of what the expected density would be in the TC2 zoning district, this district requires 435 square feet of land area per dwelling unit. That comes to a gross estimate of 120 apartment units. Again, not considering any of the net factors that go into the site. So the net density might actually be a little bit lower, but a gross expectation would be somewhere in the range of 120 dwelling units. I'm also here just going to throw in the TC zoning district development standards so that you can see here what I just made reference to. Specifically, I don't think you guys can see my cursor, but in that red outlined box, you can see for apartment uses, 435 square feet of land area per dwelling unit. For upper story residential uses, there is no density requirement. However, within the zoning district, there are limitations in both the square footage of a building, being 10,000 square feet, which you see there at the very last line, and also there is a maximum height of three stories up to 45 feet. So again, there's sort of a built-in density cap with regard to what you would expect there. Moving forward, this is a really important note that staff observed in processing this application. One of the first things that we look at when we're processing a rezoning is to consider whether or not the petitioner actually has the legal right to request a zoning action on a parcel. As you can see from the title of this petition, there are 9 parcels. However, 10 parcels are actually impacted by this development. On the left-hand side, you can see the map with the yellow outline that shows that 9 parcels that are owned by the petitioner. There is also one additional parcel that is very much impacted by this development, as well as some public right-of-way, neither of which was under the petitioner's control at the time this application was lodged, and staff has not to date received any information that this is the case even at this point. Nonetheless, no authorization was given for seeking a rezoning on this particular parcel. The parcel is owned by the mayor and alderman of Savannah. I just want to make that note so that a recommendation is not made to extend zoning to a parcel where the petitioner had no right to make such a request. So turning to evaluation of a small plan development, section 6.1.15 of the zoning ordinance talks about the requirements for a small plan development. And again, not to belabor these things, but there are certain things that must absolutely be more or less fleshed out before approval is given to a planned development, right? This is not your standard carte blanche zoning where we go through a specific site development plan later to determine details. For a planned development request, certain details of that development are laid out at the point of rezoning. And so you can see here in determining whether or not the applicant had actually met these requirements with regard to outlining the proposed uses. There were no justifications that were given for what in essence is sort of, I'll call it tampering with the permitted uses under the zoning ordinance at present. Uses are permitted based on the current zoning, and they are assigned as either by right, limited use, or special use based on the context and the intensity of the zoning district. And so in this particular petition, staff observed that the petitioner had chosen particular uses and made them by right uses or had included them where they might otherwise not be permissible. And that was one of the most significant notes. Again, if that is approved, it is within the petitioner's right to ask for those things. Nonetheless, if those things are approved at this juncture and then ultimately approved by council, they will then be permissible on this particular site until a zoning action reverses them. Another thing, in reviewing many of these requirements regarding utilities, transportation and circulation, off-street parking, landscaping requirements, and things of that nature, MPC staff submitted the petition through the city's site plan review, and each of the reviewing departments expressed concerns. Traffic engineering met with the petitioner on multiple occasions and expressed concerns about impacts to right-of-way that the petitioner did not own. Likewise, utilities, stormwater in particular, expressed concerns about flooding of any underground parking structures that were proposed, as well as any adjoining residences. There has been no firm parking plan that has been submitted. There have been a number of discussions about underground garages, as well as automated parking systems that might be used, but an actual plan that shows 200 plus parking spaces for the residents, as well as the commercial uses that would occupy this particular building, has not been presented to staff. Again, it is a plan requirement that these spaces must be identified on the plan itself in the submission. Also, just to note, the plan was not accepted by Park and Tree that expressed concerns about city trees that had not been accounted for in the submitted development plan. Sorry, I just want to make sure I went to the next one. There we go. This was another portion of staff's review, again, under Section 6.15. No justification having been provided for changing any of the uses. The reason why these needed to be combined in the form of a PUD, as opposed to just sticking with the traditional commercial zoning district. By right uses allowed for things that are fairly sensitive that would otherwise require a special use permit in the current TC2 zoning district. Conflicting uses, things that if they were allowed to go into the building would restrict other uses that are within the approved use list. Namely, I'll just say cannabis dispensaries along with childcare facilities and things of that nature. There's also a church that's on this block. So those things tended to be conflicting. Parking reductions that were unwarranted because the petitioner's parcel is not within any of the parking reduction zones that have been outlined. The inclusion of STVRs, which again, this sits just outside of the STVR overlay. The implication being that STVRs would not be permitted at this site. So there's a number of things that kind of went into the compilation of this PD that kind of represent sort of a picking and choosing of what was desired and build your own zoning category. The square footage of commercial uses was never nailed down, and that's particularly important because depending on the type of use, whether it's retail, restaurant, things of that nature, doctor's offices, each one carries a different parking requirement. So again, this is something that was never nailed down in order to understand it, over and above the 200 residential units, what provisions would be made for off-street parking for any future commercial uses on the site. Again, the circulation plan was rejected by traffic engineering. Open space was not adequately identified. Stormwater, again, speaking up, expressing concerns about flooding on the site. It doesn't meet the requirements of the tree ordinance. I'm sorry, that was a typo there on my part. Just to go into some specifics here, you can see the annotated site plan that was produced by traffic engineering during the multiple times that we met to talk about the petitioner's site plans. And we did go through multiple iterations, but this was the most recent one prior to appearing before the commission today. This is the architectural site plan. And you can see that traffic engineering noted that any waste vehicles would be required to take up the entire lane. You can see the impact of a semi truck if it had to come through and make a delivery, the impact that it would have moving through the area. There's an unacceptable offset once you exit the garage and getting over to Bolton Lane. Additionally, the means of egress there is non-conforming. It is too narrow. So these were just a few of the objections posed by traffic engineering. And again, under normal circumstances, these are things that would be evaluated during a later specific site plan approval process. However, because the petitioner has chosen a planned development, these are details that should be worked out beforehand. In evaluating the PUD text, I jumped straight to some of the uses that were more sensitive, that are usually more problematic. And I sat the VX zoning district, which was the original request of the petitioner, next to the TC2, as well as the Gwinnett Apartments small PD PUD text. And you can see BR indicates by right. When you look at a distillery, allowed by right, where in the current TC2 zoning district would require a special use permit. If this PUD is adopted, each of these things that is by right and ultimately approved by council as well, each of these things would be allowed to occur on the site without any further intervention or review. Bars and taverns were indicated as limited uses in the Gwinnett small PUD text, allowed by right. Retail consumption in both places indicated as limited uses. Package stores allowed by right. So you can see that these are generally more consistent with the DX zoning district, which was the original request, than they are with the TC2, which is surrounding the subject parcel, and the subject parcels themselves are currently zoned TC2. Again, some of the uses are impracticable due to proximity of a church and the potential co-location of other conflicting uses. This is another one that I called out that was particularly significant. Pharmacies that dispense medical cannabis were identified as a special use within this district. And it's of note because, again, if this is waived through this rezoning process, this is a very specific list of factors that City Council has already approved with regard to, you know, how dispensaries should not be situated near churches, near places of worship, sorry, near schools, near any of these civic uses, parks. There's a laundry list of items here. The very last item there notes that this has to be in a standalone building. None of these commercial uses are proposed to be situated in a standalone building. They will be situated within the context of a mixed-use building. So again, to do that is sort of to deviate from the current path that City Council has chosen to regulate some of these things. All right. In looking at the development standards, this is a screenshot that shows where in the PUD text the 200 unit cap was placed. The site plan still indicates that there is no maximum residential density. So again, approval of this document would be inconsistent with the PUD text itself. The map and the plan, sorry, the plan and the text should support one another. They should not conflict. You can see here, again, comparing this to the downtown expansion zoning district, the petitioner has requested standards that are much more so in line with the downtown expansion than with the traditional commercial in an effort to reshape this in the form of a PUD. It's also important to note at this point that the text includes some inappropriate standards. One in particular, when we look at planned developments, we are typically looking at something that in the future would be redeveloped consistent with a plan that was adopted at the time of zoning. So this particular standard that I happened to notice regarding future subdivision and recombination is inconsistent with this idea that the commission would be voting on a plan that ultimately would be the plan itself that would remain until this site is addressed again by the Planning Commission. So standards that speak to future development as opposed to regulating a very specific product that would be situated on the site are inconsistent with the nature of a plan development, particularly a small plan development. So with that, there is a staff recommendation that this particular request as it is, in essence, not prepared for approval, that it be denied. And if it is, if the commission is inclined to support such a request in the future, that it be brought forth as a new application, a single submission, and that submission not be accepted until it is full and complete for staff's evaluation. At that, there are three particular things that in going through this process, I think it would be important to consider as to whether or not this is complete, making sure that the petitioner is not requesting zoning for parcels that they do not have the authority to request zoning actions for. Also, this should be a plan that is able to go through the site plan review process and, in essence, to receive the support of city reviewing staff as being consistent with the city's ordinances. Traffic, stormwater, all of those departments. Finally, if the petitioner insists on combining uses as is the case in the current PUD text, that there should be establishment of clear and sufficient justification for these waivers in order to understand why it is that some of them need to be allowed to circumvent the established processes and be placed within this particular facility. With that, staff is happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Any questions for staff?
I have a question.
Mr. Meldon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate staff reports and the details. Obviously, the staff has some concerns about this application.
Absolutely.
Appreciate those concerns. A few things. Is the application considering use of medical cannabis dispensary pharmacy at this site?
So at the point that the permitted use list is adopted, whatever its state is, whether this is a by right use, a limited use, or a special use, that would go into, in essence, any future determination of whether or not that use is permitted or under what circumstances.
But it's not part of the proposal.
It is not part of the current proposal, no.
And I'm pointing it out because you had a whole slide about it. And I understand that generally you're saying, well, we want to make sure that we're protecting certain uses here and not opening the door. But specifically to cannabis use pharmacy, and you highlighted it, it would have to be in a standalone building.
Yes.
And that would be true whether or not it was in a planned development or some other zoning district, correct?
Until those standards were changed, but it was highlighted to point out the fact that it is irrelevant in this context. It should not be included.
But that line is relevant to the opening of a cannabis dispensary. Currently, it has to be in a standalone building, regardless of district.
That's right now, as the standards are, yes, that is correct.
Right now, as the ordinance states.
As the ordinance states right now, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. The same ordinances that we're basing our staff reviews on.
Yes, that's correct.
So I completely understand. I just don't want to confuse the issue about certain petitioners and certain uses that may or may not be popular in communities and kind of using that against the petition, but I understand the point that's being made. You started the presentation by saying that that's currently TC2, correct, these parcels, or the majority of the parcels?
Yes, sir.
And that essentially in your estimation, the petitioner could achieve much of what they're requesting to do in a small plan development by right currently.
I'm sorry, would you mind restating?
You opened the presentation. What I heard may not be correct. I wanted you to expound on it, that the current by right zoning, the zoning TC2,
yes,
that much of what the petitioner is asking for in the current application,
yes,
could be achieved in a TC2 district.
That is correct.
That's what your statement was?
Yes.
In your professional opinion, what are the pieces of the application that wouldn't fit into a TC2 that they would like to fit? Why are they seeking, in your estimation, a PD versus just building by right what they have now?
The petitioner principally is seeking greater density in this development. They are asking for a number of units that would exceed what would be allowed, and they are seeking a height that would not be allowed within the TC2.
So what's the density max that they could put on this parcel now with TC2?
So again, just as a gross number, if the 1.2 acres that the petitioner has under his control right now, you multiply that by 43,560, you end up with 50 some odd thousand. That works out to divided by 435 square feet per dwelling unit. That works out to 120 units.
120 units. And right now the proposal is somewhere around 200?
It is 200 units.
Okay. So there's the unit density. Mm-hmm. And do you attribute that to, okay, there's unit density there. And then I'm guessing that that's related in some way to height as well.
There is a sort of a natural cap that's produced by the TC2 zoning district.
Yeah.
That's correct. Three stories or 45 feet in height.
45 feet in height is the...
Or a maximum of three stories, really.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do we see higher heights with max three stories?
I guess depending on the nature of the architecture, the structures themselves might require that sometimes they go a little bit higher.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So there's density and their height, and those are related to one another. What other issues do you feel like they're trying to gain with the PD versus the TC2?
General relaxation of some of the development standards. So, again, a more downtown oriented, completely filling out a block in essence.
Yeah.
Where here there's a limitation of 10,000 square feet. The petitioner is asking for development standards that would allow in essence 100% coverage of a lot.
Got it. So, I mean, this is a parcel that sits adjacent to what I consider to be downtown. I mean, I kind of consider it to be downtown anyway, but how do we think about as planners, like where we draw that line? I understand that it's a zoning district, but what would you think is, I'm not asking what the ordinance says is the most appropriate density here, but like what does staff feel like is the most appropriate density for this district if it were to change?
Well, I guess my initial answer would be, I think the most current, the current density is probably the most appropriate. With regard to what's considered downtown, the future land use map actually identifies this as downtown transition.
Mm-hmm.
So it still recognizes that it is adjacent to downtown, but it doesn't place it, in downtown. And accordingly, there's the historic height map, you know, and some other policies that sort of shape what it is that's supposed to happen here. Again, staff, for the record, is not necessarily opposed to the idea of this becoming a node of interaction, a commercial node. I think the policy documents speak to mixed use at this corner.
Right.
So,
okay. Do you think that TC2 you think would be on like the higher end scale of a, because it's a downtown transitional,
mm-hmm.
which is basically meaning there's some flexibility.
Sure.
There's some things in the zoning that's going to resemble more downtown urban core, and other things that are going to mirror more, you know,
headed towards
dense
the suburbs.
Urban. Yeah.
Right.
Somewhere, you know, not quite suburban.
Absolutely.
Do you feel like TC2 is more closely related to that downtown urban density? Is it somewhere in the middle of that transitional gradient that you would define, or is it more closely related to suburban development? Where would you place that professionally?
I think the intent is to be in the middle. I think there's flexibility. I think if you think of a small downtown area, any of Georgia's, you know, small towns that are kind of outside of our larger cities, you might go and find 3-4 story buildings that are sort of in a main street feel.
Yeah.
I think that's the intent of the traditional commercial district.
Okay. Where do you feel like there's flexibility between TC2 and a planned development? And specifically in this corridor, or do you feel that there is room for flexibility between TC2 and?
I think there is room for flexibility. I could not say necessarily where that lands. I think the reminiscence to DX probably goes a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, in working with the petitioner in this case, we've kind of worked our way down to something that, you know, again, 4 stories, 5 stories, set back. I think we're getting there. I think again, the density number is probably just a little too intense considering, single family and duplexes that are within the area. You still have, you know, folks who are living a relatively, quaint, you know, I guess as quaint as you can be within a city, you know, having kids and families and,
right.
you know, people walking up and down the street. So the idea that this would become something that more so resembles, you know, I don't want to say Bay Street, but, you know, on Bay Street, we do have 4- and 5-story buildings.
And I'm just thinking about, you know, the area. There's a newer development just to the south of it, which
mm-hmm.
is it 3 or 4 stories?
It is 3 stories.
3 stories. Mm-hmm. And then there's a development currently under construction underway closer to the north, which I think is
five or six stories perhaps, but I know that's in a historic building on Liberty. Okay, so that's helpful. In terms of, are there any exceptions they're asking for in terms of parking?
The petitioner has placed within their PUD document, they've kind of put themselves within the parking exempt or parking reduction zone. They've attempted to limit, it's the Victorian standards, which of course Victorian is right across the street.
Yeah.
Victorian permits an exemption from parking for the first 3,000 square feet of any non-residential use. Mm-hmm. And so they adopted those standards into this PUD document. So,
okay. How does staff feel about that, the parking?
Again, being a greenfield site, the petitioner is kind of creating his own burden. I think he's creating his own burden. I think there's the opportunity to do something that could accommodate the parking.
So you think there needs to be more parking than what's proposed?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then finally, I just want to make a note. I know that this went through a site plan review at the city level.
Yes.
Which is usually something that happens later on or more thoroughly later on in the process.
Well, this is a pre-development meeting. So this is actually encouraged, where we have, folks who are thinking of developing something, you know, they send their site plans in so that they can kind of get some foresight from reviewing departments as to what issues are coming down the road.
No, I understand. I just wanted to point out that, you know, there are, and we have wonderful folks that look at these sites a lot of these issues come up with every development, concerns around stormwater, access to service vehicles.
Sure.
And I don't know a lane in downtown that isn't completely blocked by one of our sanitation trucks while they're servicing it. But I appreciate you educating the commission on the comments thus far.
Sure.
Sorry for taking up so much time, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Melder. Mr. Coleman.
Yes. The city manager brought up some things that actually I would like to comment on, but I'll leave those alone right now because I think it's muddied the water a little bit more than necessary. But one of the questions I have is the petitioner is trying to use sort of DX as the guide for where they're going with this. Could you give the commission an explanation of what the DX zone is called for? I mean, what is the definition of when you use a DX zoning classification?
So for context, the 703 Louisville site that just came through at the last meeting is currently zoned DX. So this is downtown expansion. I guess kind of, again, attempting to sort of make that line clearer, you know, perhaps the petitioner feels that this is still downtown. So downtown expansion is what DX stands for.
And based on the way that the zoning manual and the new zone's been done and the zoning's been done, has not DX usually not been by parcels but more a general area that allows that there's a true expansion that's a capability as opposed to a single lot that's zoned into that zoning classification? DX, and you say expansion, doesn't qualify or make you think that I'm looking at a single piece of property in an established zoning district as a DX, as a downtown expansion, when the zoning in that area has been sort of established over time. It's not an area that's underdeveloped or what have you that looks to be an expansion, but established as opposed to that. Would you not say that seeking DX in a situation like that would be abnormal?
Context matters. And so again, when you're talking more so on the west side of town, again, where the SCAD site is, a lot of that is reclamation. I'd call that reclamation, where you have blighted areas, to be quite honest, that need to be redeveloped. Here, the context is that this is, right adjacent to downtown. It is an area that, it is still somewhat tender. I'll use the word tender. You want to encourage this youthful and vibrant new development that kind of seems to be happening in some of these areas that are less established, especially on the periphery of a historic district. And so I think this is going to be precedent setting. And I think that that's why we're taking so much time to talk about this. But because of the context, I can't say that I think that level of intensity is appropriate here. DX, again, permits eight stories. I hate to keep comparing it, but that's the most recent example I think we all have. The Louisville site, I think those wound up being 6 to 7 stories apiece. Again, lots of, you know, parking on site, things of that nature. So it's not to say that there is not a middle ground between these. Whether or not this level of expansion needs to occur at this particular site, I think it's likely inappropriate.
And one other question, this relates to the TC2 and the 10,000 square foot building footprint. I want to be clear that we are talking the footprint of a building at 10,000 square foot. And in my review of TC2, that if you have a large parcel, that 10,000 square foot isn't limited to a single building. It's the maximum footprint for a building footprint. So if you had multiple buildings on a site, they could each be 10,000 square foot. So there's not that limitation that sort of has been put out there that there's a 10,000 square foot limitation. If the lot is large enough, they can produce other structures on that same property up to that footprint of 10,000. So when you start calculating what could be put on that site relative to the 3 stories and the 45 foot maximum height, that is the maximum height. It doesn't go over that. Then your calculation would have to be based on an actual design of those buildings on that, where the petitioner could be putting more buildings on there than the 10,000 square foot. So I want that clear to the group that there's a lot more nuancing of these sites than being put out here for us right now. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Jarrett.
As far as the future land use map goes, it is not, doesn't show a DX zoning, does it?
It does not. The future land use map shows traditional commercial use.
Okay. And this small PUD would probably fit within those uses if it were manageable in size?
If the density were appropriate, if it were capped appropriately, yes, ma'am, it could.
Okay. And as far as the parking goes, whether they've requested a reduction in parking or not, we still haven't seen parking that would accommodate the number of cars even reduced, have we?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Anything else with staff? All right. Thank you, Mr. Mr.
Just clarification. Is the petition is not seeking DX currently, correct?
He is not.
Is not. It's PD.
It is small PD. Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Yep.
Anything else for staff? All right. Thank you. We're here from the petitioner. Thank you, Mr. Morrow.
Thank you. Okay. So I think they... It's public comment. I'm sorry. Sally, did you say that we attach this to the agenda? Yeah.
Go down. Minimize. Please.
That's what's happening. I'm so sorry.
I think it's turned. Bear with me just a second. Let me try to get this right. Strong safe. Okay. I think that's it. Thank you. Thank you. Robert McCorkle here on behalf of the petitioner Foreign Development. My client, Travis Stringer, is here today. I've officially gotten old enough, by the way, that I have to wear reading glasses to be able to see anything. So, and I apologize for my lack of haircut. My haircut person moved out of town and I'm refusing to get one. for as long as I can make it. I want to make sure this actually fits on y'all's screen. Is that good for everybody? Okay.
Yes.
I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, your patience with me a little bit today. This has been obviously a long presentation from staff. We've been trying to get to this day for 9 months or 7 months, depending on which way you look at it. I'd say to y'all that I hate files like this. I don't like files that give the impression that we are in some kind of adversarial relationship with staff. We don't consider it to be that at all. I've never considered having adversarial relationships with staff. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I respect staff and what it is they're trying to do. But we talked about having childcare and cannabis together. We talked about the word tampering. We talked about the word subverting. All of these, I don't want it to be perceived that my client is a bad actor or that I am a bad actor because of what we're here today. We have been fully cooperative in this process from the beginning. We just haven't been able to reach an agreement with staff. Although after the staff report and after the presentation with the questions of the city manager, you heard that, well, the uses are pretty much okay and the height is not that far off and the density may not be that far off. But it seems like when you read a staff report that we're, you know, miles away from each other. And frankly, we wanted to get on this agenda today in order to obtain substantive comments to our project, which we have had a very, very difficult time obtaining. We have met with staff 9 times on this project, going back to December of 2022. Now, one of our staff members left for the person who was there for the first half of the process, which I'm sure caused some issues in what was going on. But our resubmittal, we originally submitted for DX the first week of March. And through our meetings with staff, by May, it became clear that staff didn't want us to do DX because it doesn't have defined standards and whatever else. And so they asked us to do a small PUD. We submitted our use schedule and the site plan and the PUD design guidelines in May of this year. It's now September. You may have heard staff mention that not that many changes, and you may have heard the pre-meeting, not that many changes have been made over that process. Yes, we've tinkered and moved things around and done things based on the response to staff's comments, but the general plan and the general project has been the same since May. What we have, what's been going on between us and staff is just a fundamental disagreement on what the process is and what we should be doing in order to get there and how PUDs generally work. I acknowledge openly that we are not submitting to you a plan that meets the design standards and the use table of TC2. That's what's been suggested that we do here today. If I were doing that, we wouldn't be seeking a rezoning. It is the very purpose why we are here. I openly acknowledge that our design guidelines do not meet the TC2 standards. The whole purpose of seeking this rezoning and the whole purpose of the plan development was to find a middle ground between TC2 and DX. DX allows 8 stories, TC2 allows 3 stories. We're asking for 4 and 5 stories between the two buildings as an example, okay? So the whole purpose of this process was to find some middle ground, which is what we've worked really hard to do, but have been, again, unsuccessful in getting really substantive comments until we saw the staff report for this on Sunday night. There's been a lot of discussion about SPR. I'm just going to give a couple examples just for the last 2 weeks. I'm not going to go through the timeline of all of this. There's a lot of history in the staff report about all these meetings. I'm not going to go through the timeline, but I just want to give you just for the flavor of the last 2 weeks, which is starting on the Sunday before we were supposed to be on the agenda on the 12th. Within 5 days of that hearing date, we received an email from staff asking if our project was for apartments or if it was for owner-occupied condos. And this is 9 months into the process. On a Sunday night, late at night, on Sunday night before that September 12th meeting, we received an email saying that we needed to apply. In order to proceed, we needed to apply for a future land use map amendment. After 9 months of discussion, we had been told we met the future land use map. The previous staff report, because this has been pulled on multiple occasions, said that we met the future land use map. The one in front of you today says that we meet a future land use map. So that was news to us, again, 2 days before the September 12th meeting. We were then told we couldn't table to this meeting today because in order to table a meeting, even to a date certain, we would have to run new ads and put up new signs and go through the whole process, which would take a minimum of 30 days, which we corrected that because that's not correct. And then the SPR meeting that was mentioned several times. That SPR meeting occurred last week on Thursday. SPR meetings are at 1:30. The SPR meeting was scheduled by staff. We had no idea what was happening. We were not told it was scheduled. We were not told the application had been made. We received a phone call at 20 minutes before the meeting asking if we were aware that we were on the agenda by city staff. City staff wanted to know why we weren't attending, why we weren't invited for our own project. And so that's how we found out about the SPR meeting. And these comments that have been made by the different city groups, other than traffic, haven't been made over the course of 9 months. They were made on Thursday at a meeting where it was clear in the meeting that city staff had not, none of the groups had actually seen the plans that we had submitted. So we helped to answer questions on that call. This is kind of how this thing has gone over the process of this entire time. And I hate it and I don't like it, but that's where we are. And that's why we wanted to be on the agenda today, to try to make some progress on this after all this time. Again, I don't want to go through staff report and go into any details, but you know, I do want to talk about the project itself. Another thing that's interesting about this today is there's no pictures. There's no land use map in the staff report or in the agenda. There's no pictures of the surrounding properties in the staff report or the agenda. There's no discussion about what those properties are or any context for what we're even talking about or the site. There hasn't been a picture shown today that actually shows where the site is located. It's just a very unusual deal, I suppose. I'm sure y'all are confused about some of these items as well. So I want to give some context first and talk about our project in a positive manner so that you understand what it is we're trying to do and why we're here today, because I'm sure it seems confusing. This is our site right here. This is a map that backs up and shows almost the entire city. Our theory of all of this was that the city, as you know, is going through a housing crisis. We are in desperate need of apartments. We are in desperate need of multifamily. It's not just an affordable housing crisis, it's a housing crisis. The city years ago decided that along the west side of the city, along the historic district, that the Montgomery MLK corridor would be a great location for larger height, larger density multifamily projects. And our site is essentially a mirror of that. When we originally applied for DX, you will see on this side, there are D zones, DX, DC zones over here. And so we were thinking that we would do something somewhat similar because this is a great location for height. The east side of Broad Street creates a border around downtown, through downtown, just like MLK and Montgomery does. And so it's great because it's outside the historic district. It's not in any of the landmark districts. It is an area in need of redevelopment. If you've ridden down there or walked this site, you would know that there's an area that needs redevelopment. And the city has even started to, just to give you some flavor, in case you haven't driven down there lately, these projects on Montgomery and MLK corridor go from Liberty all the way back to 35th now. So, you know, you've got the Bowery, you've got Skylark, you've got Addy. Some of these pictures are just to show you that most of them are directly next to single-story and two-story residential and commercial buildings. All the way as you continue down towards 35th Street, you can see here again, small two-story buildings, large four- and five-story apartment buildings, all the way down that corridor. This is new development on both sides of Montgomery, all the way down. This is Abercorn going down to 35th Street. There's another project down on 35th Street. It's going to be four stories, 90 units. And so the city has partially chosen to address their housing needs over the years by trying to put denser, larger projects on the outskirts running down the western corridor of the true downtown area. Our whole theory of this project was that that might make sense on the east side of the same corridor. We consider our project to be a mirror of those properties as they existed. These developments have already started to come up. This is Park and Broad, which is two blocks from us, which is three stories, but it's a large, dense apartment unit, which is two blocks from us. Farther up, as the city manager mentioned, this is the new project at East Broad and Liberty next to the school. So you can see it's five stories in parts. I believe it's six stories in parts, and this is looking back at it from across the way. And it's currently under construction. And these are on East Broad as you're driving down, going down the same corridor that our project is on. Again, we originally sought the DX thinking that this would help us do this. We went to the SPD because that's what staff requested us to do. And then we submitted our documents and tweaked them over the days. I want to talk about our specific site. You hadn't seen it, but this is the zoning map. It actually shows the location of our project. You will see that to the back corner on both sides of us, we have industrial property, both here and here. We back up immediately to a railroad track and are located immediately adjacent to a Georgia Power transformer power plant. We have very few neighbors. It is one of the great benefits of developing this site for this density. And I want to look, show you just to see what's across the street. This is the aerial. This is a prior aerial on Google Earth of the site itself. This is Gwinnett Street running here. This is Broad Street running across. This is Bolton behind us, and this is CSX Railroad to the east. This is what's directly across the street from us. This is an empty lot that's adjacent to a two-story family residential. This is the other side of the lane across the street from us. This is new construction, two-story residences that go down. They're duplex or townhouses going down. Diagonally across the street, we got the Starfish Cafe, which has been vacant for many number of years. It's been sitting there unused. This is the project that's across the street from us on Gwinnett. This site has been derelict for a very long time. There are several people sleeping in front of it today, which you can see in this picture because I took these pictures today and yesterday, on the project. This project has currently been submitted to be redeveloped as a multifamily, mixed-use multifamily development doing four or five stories on the site, immediately adjacent to us. We're not the only folks that have the idea that this is a good corridor to put in additional multifamily. As you can see on the road here, just so everybody has the context, this drops about 20 feet, probably going down under the railroad crossing. So there are comments in the staff report about us causing backing up traffic on Gwinnett for Uber and DoorDash. We have no access on Gwinnett. There's a wall running down Gwinnett between our property and that property. So I don't think anybody could be backed up on Gwinnett. And it's one-way street on East Broad going north. So there's no way we would have any effect, I don't think, on traffic on Gwinnett as far as backup. But just to give the context, that's what it looks like. This is what's immediately behind us. CSX Railroad, heavy shrubbery. This is immediately behind that, which is a bunch of empty lots that are just now being redeveloped by a developer who has bought these, who is in support of our project. I believe they sent a letter of support that wasn't mentioned today, nor is it in the staff report or on the agenda, but we had a few letters of support sent by surrounding property owners who are developers and commercial owners. They're also trying to do work in this area to develop this lands and all these empty lots. This is the industrial site that's diagonally across the street from us on Bolton and what it currently looks like the other morning. This is it across the railroad tracks. This is the Georgia Power site that runs the entire length of Bolton on the other side of us. We have absolutely no residential or commercial neighbors to the entire length of Bolton going down. This is important. And you can see here, looking back across the site, this is the new apartment complex at Park and Broad over the other side of that site, which it sits on the other side of that there. These are the duplexes that are currently on our site, just so you have a feel for them. There's four of them, four small buildings on the site currently. This is it from the front side on Bolton. This is the church that sits behind us. This is the current access that goes to the church. There's a lot of talk in the staff report about us taking away their access. We have no intention of taking away the church's access. We've met with the church and discussed this with the church. For one, this access as it currently sits isn't actually part of the city lane. This access, as we know it, is actually on CSX's property, and I don't think it's actually allowed to be there, but it wraps around the church and connects to the lane. So that's not actually even a legal road where it currently sits. What we're proposing is to put the access on the other side of the church, which is actually adjacent to where their parking lot is. And if you saw the Sanborn map that was in the agenda, it's actually where the original drive was before. We're putting it back as it historically existed, because this lane, which continues back here, doesn't actually go to anything. It runs into a railroad track. This is just to show you the parking situation on the street, because we have no real neighbors. So this is my car, but there are four cars. We have parking, curb parking on East Broad and on both sides of Bolton, because we have no neighbor on this side. And in the morning before 8 o'clock in the morning, when people would be staying overnight in their houses, there were four cars total between both streets. So I say all of that just to give context, because I don't think there's been a lot about where the site is, what it is, and why we're suggesting that we do this. The other thing about the site that makes it a great apartment site is that it's walking distance to a grocery store. It's walking distance to an elementary school. There are a lot of options around. It's on a CAT bus. It's on two CAT bus lines, actually. There's three different CAT bus stations that are in proximity to it. So since we submitted our site plan and our use schedule and everything in May, and I'll just talk about that a little bit, we have gone through this process and over the time of this have made revisions to our plan. We heard staff's objections, which primarily are related to height and mass, or height and density. That's the gist of it at the end of the day, is height and density seem to be the concern. And so we've tried to address them in different ways. We reduced the fifth story that we were proposing all the way down the length of Bolton right here, so that we reduced this to a four-story building with a maximum height of 49 feet, which is 4 feet taller than what's currently permitted. It's an extra story, but it's 4 feet taller than what's currently permitted. We have backed up and required a 55-foot offset off of Broad Street for the fifth story, so that it will not be perceived for people when they're going down Broad Street, down the one-way street. The six-story or the five-story building, we've reduced down to 60 feet in height, so it is 15 feet more than what we otherwise would. But we, again, don't have direct neighbors except for the limited buildings that are over across the street, which are about to be redeveloped for a large project, and we have a road that drops down some 20 feet next to us. So you're going to have a wall next to you when you're driving by it as far as what you would see when you're driving. We reduced the overall building footprint. We capped the total number of units for the project at 200. We don't know whether it's going to be 200 units. That's a cap. We did not choose to do a per square foot density for each one because, again, we were finding a middle ground between DX and TC2, but we did cap it at 200 units. Obviously, whether we can have that many units is going to depend on whether we can park it and other things that are being involved with it. We also capped the amount of commercial square footage at 10,000 square feet total. And that's in our plan. We added 10 additional off-street parking spaces in connection with the lane, and we reconfigured our access based on beginning discussions with traffic. The project was specifically designed to try to preserve Gwinnett Lane, which was part of the thing that staff was concerned about doing too. So we tried to build the buildings and do it in such a way to not only preserve the lane, but to put it back in the alignment as it originally was. And so all of that is to say there was nothing terribly unusual to me about what this process has been like as far as what we are asking for. We acknowledge that we're asking for something different than TC2 that's bigger than what it is. We were trying to find middle ground through this process. But what we're being asked to do is essentially make it the same as TC1. And I would proffer to you that some of the comments that were made today, when they came out and we saw them in the staff report, and then when I heard them today, is really the first time we've heard some of these. We have been, again, trying to get feedback from different, we're trying to be getting feedback from MPC staff from the different city groups for a period of 4 months without being able to get any. The first time anything happened on any of that other than traffic was on Thursday when the SPR meeting was held that we weren't invited to until the last minute. And so part of the reason to be here today is to, if we had not asked to be on the agenda today, I'm not sure even that SPR meeting would have ever happened. I'm not sure we would have gotten the comments from the other departments because we've been incapable of getting them. And what we're being asked to do now is go through an SPR process and fully design a site plan before we come through a PUD. I've been doing this a long time. I've done a lot of PUDs over the years. I've never had that happen. I've never been to SPR on a PUD before we went through this process. I mean, PUDs are typically have one-page site plans on them. Usually they get shopped around to the different departments to give comments of their overarching major concerns. And then those are approved, and ultimately, and the final development plan is worked out, then we go through the process of talking about all the specifics. The use schedule was a big discussion today about us trying to change the uses from TC2. I show you this, try to get it so you can read it. This is the TC2 use schedule. It wasn't included in the staff report. but this is the TC2U schedule. All the check marks are all the items, they're identical in ours to the TC2U schedule. One of them you'll see on there is cannabis dispensary as a special use, which is also in ours because it just got carried over from the TC2 rules. If we had ever been asked to remove that, we would have removed it. We can't have a cannabis dispensary, but it just got carried over and copying over the TC2. But we never asked to remove it. We did have STVR on here, which you'll see down at the bottom. And I'm sorry if this got cut off. There is a STVR was on there, but staff specifically raised the issue with us and we changed it. But instead of deleting it, we put minimum of 30 days. Well, by definition, an STVR is less than 30 days. So if you can't have a rental for less than 30 days, you can't have an STVR. So we're not asking for STVRs. It just happens to be to point out the fact that we changed it. We put it under parens. It really can be struck from the list. So a lot of these things, again, we did change special uses for alcohol uses, which have always been a real process in Mid-City, into being accepted uses here. So we could have a restaurant with alcohol sales or a bar inside the bottom of these 10,000 square feet we're going to have total. Part of the issue and the reason to do this is because when NUZO was adopted, TC2 and other Mid-City districts, which were designed for the historic Mid-City district, were then sprinkled out outside of the historic district. And so things like 10,000 square foot building footprints, which were designed for the historic nature of Mid-City, are now in locations that are not in Mid-City. Height restrictions, we're not inside the height map, which was mentioned by staff, but we have a 3-story height restriction because we're now in a Mid-City district, even though we're not in Mid-City. And so almost all of these multifamily projects, everyone I've ever been involved with, some of the ones on MLK and Montgomery Corridor, all had requests for either a bunch of variances or a rezoning to allow a real apartment project to be built of a certain scale and size. And that's what we did today. And so without going down the entire list, we do believe that our application as it relates to getting this done is a complete application. There are comments in there, like, for instance, that we haven't provided a parking plan. That's not correct. We have provided a parking plan. We provided it before our meeting that was supposed to occur on the 12th. It's not included in here. We are showing currently 189, I believe it is, parking spaces on the site plus 15 on the surface. We're going to do it through a mechanical lift system inside of the bottom floor of the building to run the project. It partially goes underground, partially on the bottom floor. This has been submitted to staff. But at the end of the day, what we're approving today necessarily is not our parking plan and where our parking spaces are exactly located. What we're approving is a set of design standards that would apply for this property. And what we are required to have is one space per unit. So if we can't park one space per unit, then we can't have that many units. That's what's going to control our density is ultimately the parking. And so the specific, I've never done a PUD where our approval of a PUD wasn't a one-page document that shows this is where our building footprint is, this is where our exits and entrances are. That's how it's always been done. Specific locations of parking space and other things will be worked out when we go through our final master plan approval. But at the end of the day, we're here today because we're trying to make progress on getting this done. I really did want an opportunity to talk to y'all to understand that there's two sides to every story, I suppose, always, and both sides are frustrated, but we have been working incredibly hard to try to obtain comments and feedback on what is going to be an extremely expensive project to build. The goal of it is to provide much-needed housing that this city needs. We think it's a good location for the reasons I discussed. We think that because we don't have natural neighbors, that because of the railroad behind us, that because of all the different things that work out, it's a great location for this. And again, it mirrors and creates an East Broad corridor that mirrors the Montgomery MLK corridor where the city can find density. Because if we have to build apartments in 3-story buildings with 10,000 square foot minimums, we're never going to resolve the housing issues that we have in the city. And though 10,000 square foot minimums may allow you to build multiple buildings, it exponentially increases the cost because every building has to be a separate building. And that exponential cost then drives up rents, which is another thing that the city is actively trying to fight, is driving up rents.
if every apartment building has to be three stories and 10,000 square foot building maximums, then the price, the rent is just going up and up and up. And so, again, without going through all the specifics, I know staff didn't go through each one, we do not think that this project is detrimental. We do believe, we know we have work to do on specific site plan issues with regards to stormwater and getting traffic comfortable and all of those things that normally happen in the aftermath of going through this. What we're asking to do is to adopt a framework that allows us to go through that process and get that done. But in order to do that, we're going to have to work with the city in order to get there. And this is the first step in letting us start that engagement so that we can kind of start to build what we believe is a great project. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. McCorkle. Ms. Jarrett.
Okay, I have a few questions for you. The first is, have you even talked with the city about obtaining the right-of-way necessary?
We have talked to the city about obtaining the right-of-way. Also, we have talked to the city about the city lot. Not only, I will acknowledge, by the way, it was mentioned several times that we don't have the ability to rezone property that we don't own without the authority of the city. That lot is not part of this zoning application. That we're not rezoning that today. I acknowledge that it's shown on our plan as part of the edge of our building. And the reason we've shown it is because we've already gone through the process with the city. The appraisal is complete with the city. The price has been agreed to with the city. Notices have gone out to all the neighbors that the property is being conveyed to us. And we are in the process of signing the contract, negotiating the contract with the city now to acquire that property.
Okay.
And so once that is acquired, we will have to come back and either add it to the rezoning or come back and supplement it to rezone that lot to the same SPD.
Wouldn't it be helpful if we had everything presented at one time?
Well, the plan is not going to change. The only way the plan changes is if somehow the transaction with the city fails. Otherwise, what we show, we went ahead and showed it in our plan, so it's not going to change. If we acquire that property, this assumes we're going to acquire the property. And I would have assumed that if this is approved, that it would be obviously conditioned upon us obtaining the property from the city.
Okay. The parking, I don't see a plan for parking. In the submittals that were presented to the commission, there is no plan for parking. That is a huge concern for me. I know you know that.
I do. I know it is. And all I can tell you is we submitted a parking plan to staff, and I'm not sure why it's not in the submittal.
Okay. The parking plan that you submitted, what is the likelihood that we will have to change that in the future?
I mean, at this point, we're asking for a zoning that allows us to then fully design this project beyond a single page. So I don't know how to answer that question, but if we are one unit, one space per unit, we're going to have to park it one way or another.
Understood, which is another reason why I think we're a little premature in seeing this project, because if I don't see parking, I can't say that I'm comfortable with this project moving forward. What did the church say about removing the road, or what did the church say about the development when you met with them?
As I understand it, I did not meet with them. My client did, and as I understand it, they expressed some concern about the height of the project and wanted to make sure that they understood kind of what was going on. I don't think they have a problem with, there was no indication of there being a problem with the access itself, as long as they still have access to their property. Again, the access that exists now is across CSX's property, so with no rights to have it, other than the fact that I suppose it's been there a while, but I'm not sure you can condemn or can adversely possess something from a railroad. But we're ultimately going to put it back and provide access that is immediately adjacent to where their parking area is, which isn't paved. They just have a grass area next to their building.
Okay. So you're telling me that the drive that we saw in the picture is on CSX property?
Yes.
And the alternate access for that property would be East Gwinnett Lane?
Yes.
And you want to take East Gwinnett Lane and turn it into a building?
No.
That portion of East Gwinnett Lane and turn it into
the part that's behind their property, yes.
Okay.
By turning the road the way it originally was designed and putting it back, which will run up against the side of their property with them having access off of the lane. So instead of their access being in the back, it would be on the side.
Okay, so they would have access to East Gwinnett Lane as you reconstruct it.
Yes, ma'am.
They would have to turn off that one-way road, go down East Gwinnett Lane, go down the second portion, the turn in East Gwinnett Lane, get onto Bolton, and then get into their property, correct?
No, they would pull in off of Bolton just like they do now, except for the drive out. The driveway is on the other side of their building. So they would pull in off of Bolton and turn right into their property.
Okay, so there'd be a driveway right beside the East Gwinnett Lane.
Let me pull up a picture. Will that help? Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Sorry. So, yeah. So the way they would come in here is pull in Gwinnett, pull down here and turn down the side of their property, which would give them access to what is essentially their parking area.
So you're going to provide a driveway cut for them?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. We've been in discussions with them. We're not trying to cut the church off from access to their property.
Can you talk to me about the drainage for this property? Do we have any plan for drainage whatsoever?
Again, the staff report is correct that we haven't gotten to a full utility plan as we normally wouldn't have because all of the utilities are available in the right-of-way, including the drainage. When we get to specific plan level, we're going to have to discuss with the city whether or not there are improvements needed to the pipes that are there now, which it sounds like there may be based on the initial comment that we got at SPR on the 14th. But no, we don't have the plan is to use the city's stormwater sewer system now. And if that requires upgrades, we're going to have to discuss that with the city, which will be true whether this was going to be three stories and 120 units or whatever was discussed or whether it's going
understood,
to be 200
understood.
Units.
Wouldn't it be helpful to know those answers beforehand so that if the drainage has to be improved for 500 feet and increased pipe size of 2 feet in diameter for the pipes, that you would at least be aware of it and be able to figure it into your cost analysis?
I think it will be helpful to know as we go through this process. What's tricky about it is the same push and pull there always is, which is the expenditure of engineering fees prior to knowing whether or not we can rezone the property.
But if you sat down with the drainage folks at the city of Savannah, you'd probably get some idea of where you stand.
Sure. We have been trying again to obtain comments from city departments since May. We heard from stormwater on the SPR meeting on the 14th, because typically those comment process runs through staff, not through us directly when we've been through these before. But again, that dialogue has been created now at this point, which just started on the 14th.
One other concern I have, and it's a pretty significant concern, is if you build these huge buildings that you're going to build, has anyone looked at the burden of the buildings on the retaining wall that runs along Gwinnett?
I don't know that we've gotten, have you? Yes.
Do we have a problem there?
Speak about it.
Not currently. Yeah, I was going to say, we would need you to come state your name for the record and speak it to the microphone.
Yeah, Travis Stringer with the forum. Hey, Commission. So we did an initial geotech report many months ago. We located the exact locations of where all the tiebacks from the retaining wall come into the property. Give or take five locations. They're all on average about 18 to 25 feet deep below the surface level of our site. Part of the reason that we did make adjustments to the underground parking from the very, very original proposal that was underground the whole site was related to that.
Mm-hmm.
The deepest one goes about 5 feet into the property line. With the depth of them and then the distance in, we're not having any direct impact on the tiebacks related to the retaining wall. And since we're not digging down deep into the property to do an underground parking structure, we're avoiding that completely for the most part.
Okay. Are we really going to be able to build this garage that we've talking about?
Yes.
Okay. That's not been my experience in the past, but we'll pass it that.
Okay. I think there's one currently being built on Franklin Street, or not built, but in the
process. There's not one being built on Bull or on Whitaker.
Well, we also got rid of that one in another project as a part of changes with agreements with the neighborhood that we were working with. So
thank you.
Thank you.
I had a quick question for you before. Mr. Coleman, didn't you have...
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my question.
All right, thank you. When was the parking plan submitted to staff? Do you know?
Sometime in the days before, it would have been the second week of September.
So it was prior to when the actual application should have been submitted?
It was prior to the previous meeting. The parking plan has changed over the time of going through this process. So there was originally parking discussion back when we first submitted the SPD back in May, but the revised parking plan was submitted prior to the 12th.
And the due date for that submission, I'm going to ask staff real quick if you don't mind. What was the due date for the submission for this meeting?
September 1st, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a previous application that's been pending and been tabled on multiple. I mean, frankly, our application was filed in February.
Okay.
So we met the filing application deadline. And again, as mentioned by staff, there haven't been major significant changes as the process is going on. But yes, things have changed all the way up to about the probably 7th, 8th, 9th of September. We were trying to revise based on our last meeting from our set of meetings with staff to put that in there, which is why we weren't on the agenda on the 12th.
Okay. All right. Thank you for answering that. And then my other question is, were you ever given a particular reason from the city departments as to why you guys didn't have a conversation up until last week's SPR?
No.
All right. Thanks. Mr. Coles.
And this is more just a comment than a question. We've heard both from staff and from petitioner a lot of, well, this was said or this wasn't said. And I don't, none of us like an adversarial conversation here. We're trying to get the work of the city and county done. But I would suggest that instead of just putting out these statements, that there would actually be documentation. You're an attorney. You know, everything needs to be in writing. So I'm getting to a point, and I think probably a lot of my fellow commissioners are, that we're kind of sick of hearing, well, this wasn't said until this date. Well, if we have dated emails, you know, documentation of that, then we can address that. But if there are issues with our staff from a petitioner's point of view, we need those kind of documentation so that we can address that as the board that oversees this commission. And that goes on both sides, staff and for petitioners. If the petitioners are not doing it, show us the receipts. Sorry for the phrase.
I understand. I'm trying to respond to the staff report as it was written is what I have to do based on what's said in the staff report. I don't have control over the manner in which it's written. So I'm trying to respond, and if I get asked a question about whether or not we submitted a parking plan, my answer has to be yes, we submitted a parking plan. I don't know the details necessarily of what happened. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I'm just trying to respond to the staff report. But again, I think this meeting has been helpful in the sense that there were a lot of comments and a lot of things that were in that staff report that we had not heard, and that is a positive towards trying to reach some agreement of where we're trying to get to. And that's part of the reason we wanted to be on the agenda today is because, again, if necessary, if we have to engage the city in this dialogue and city staff in this dialogue to try to progress this thing forward, then that's what we're trying to do. I just don't want there to be a misconception about why we're here. We acknowledge the fact that what we're asking for is outside the bounds of TC2 and all those things, and that's what we're have been trying to get to as a compromise between DX and TC2 that allows us to, you know, provide enough housing and a buildable project that's feasible.
Okay. Mr. Melder, you go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this discussion has been helpful too. I do want to just point out the difference between requirements and appropriateness. So any parking, stormwater, traffic, no matter what's built, depending on the zoning district, you'd have to meet the requirements of that district, correct?
Correct.
And so I think it's helpful for us to ask those questions because we want to be able to be as informed as possible when making these decisions, but I do want to draw a line, the distinction between zoning appropriateness, which is what we're discussing here today, and requirements that follow whatever zoning
this board and city council determines is correct for this project.
Yes, and we did mirror our parking requirements basically from the TC2 district or for mid-city district. We did add the 2,500 square foot reduction for commercial. We're, you know, directly across the street from the historic districts. I don't know that we're really sitting in a different situation than they are as far as these mixed-use developments to have some commercial on the lower floor. So we did ask for that, you know, consideration.
I think that's where I wanted to get some of my questions back to, is basically more on what I think of the central zoning question here is around density and mass.
Yes.
Right. And height. That's what we're talking about here. I thought, you know, you're looking at the petition and you're saying that you're looking across the historic district to the mirror image of Martin Luther King. And I just, in the Montgomery developments, just wanted to hear more about, you know, or more specifically, some of the questions that I was asking staff is, you know, where do you feel that there is room in the development to get more, to get closer to TC2 if we felt that, that mid lane in the transitional district was appropriate versus where you're trying to get to with this current application? I understand that you're trying to get somewhere in between downtown expansion and TC2. But if we've made progress in this discussion and with the current staff report, where currently are the hangups for you, or for the petition as it relates to density, mass, and height?
It's really on a policy decision or your conception of density and height themselves. You know, again, we sought the DX, which allows up to 8 stories. 3 stories is what's allowed currently. We thought a 4 story and then step back 5 story was a compromise on that. If we don't have a certain number of units, then obviously it makes rents more expensive. It makes the project more expensive. I know we're not talking about economic feasibility, but the reality is that construction is expensive. And so we're trying to make a viable project to make reuse of this property that's been sitting mostly vacant for a fairly long period of time. And so is there some compromise to be had based on the exact density number between 120 and 200? Probably. We thought that what we were doing was compromising the height when we went from 8 to 5, or we asked for 5 originally, but we stepped down one building down to 4 and stepped down part of the other building down to 4. So the thought process was is that that was the compromise. The density itself, though, to me, density is a function of height and parking at the end of the day, right? I mean, if you've got an acre and a half, you have a 10-story building or a 4-story building, how much density you're going to be able to get in that is exactly directed to your height and whether or not you can park it. And so what we've tried to do, and the reason for the PUD, it's no different than any other zoning. It's establishing parameters for the limits of what those are. So our limits are 4 stories south of the lane, 5 stories north of the lane, and we have to park 1 space for every unit we get. If our parking system doesn't work and we can't provide parking but for 50 units, then regardless of what this PUD says, we can only have 50 units.
Yeah. I do agree with staff that this will be somewhat of a precedent-setting project for the corridor. It'll be the 3rd south of Liberty, on the east side of East Broad. So I can sympathize with staff's wanting to make sure that we get this one right, because I do believe that it is, that is precedent setting there. But I can see the merits and the argument that you're looking at the development patterns and the decisions, the policy decisions over the last 15 or so years of the city to include more density, on the west side, Martin Luther King Jr., historically West Broad Street. Was there a project, over there specifically that you looked at, in their entitlement phases that is similar to this one that would be instructive for us?
Not a specific project. East Broad and Liberty is somewhat similar as far as kind of the height, mass, and location up a little ways up East Broad. There wasn't a specific project, on that road. I've been involved in some of those, and I'll make the note that on almost all of them, we had staff recommendations for denial. We had variances. We had, oftentimes neighborhood objection. We had concerns from Historic Savannah Foundation about the height and other things, things that typically come along when you're trying to build a bigger scale project. I would also say that if you've driven down the Montgomery MLK corridor in the last 15 years, you would say that it's in much better shape now than it was 15 years ago, and that it has been an excellent location for density and height that I don't think in any way causes an offense to the downtown neighborhood, nor has it caused the city to lose its historic designation or any of these other things. And so our thought process was not limited to one specific project. It was really more of a corridor issue, because obviously putting a project like this in the middle of one of the historic districts has a whole nother level of concern. But because we're outside of all of those districts, like Montgomery and MLK, although some of it got added back in the aftermath, it is, we felt it was just a good location in general, but the design guidelines were not done to specifically draw on one or the other, but I think all the projects are very similar.
Thank you. Mr. Coleman.
Yes, I was actually going to ask something along the lines of the city manager about the references to the west side and that corridor. And that corridor goes all the way to Victory Drive, and it has greater implications than the individual projects. And because of that, there were some decisions, I think, made by city council that allowed some differences to the zoning classification to allow extra story and do some of those other things. And I think going from a TC2 to a DX, which is from 3 stories to 8 stories, is pretty extreme. And to say that there's some compromise between 8 and 3 that you are willing to give, well, really you don't have it to give. You know, you're here asking for an increase in height. But I think that using the west side and some of going a little bit deeper into how some of those projects as a whole down that entire corridor have been handled is more appropriate than looking at this as a single site issue. If we're really going to talk about where we're heading as a board and a commission, we need to be looking beyond what this one site could do and start thinking about what's going to happen for the next one down the line. Because if we start making this one work, then the next person comes in with the same argument. And I've been on this planning board for 12 years and have heard all the stories of, you know, density and creating projects that are going to be affordable, and I've not seen them yet. I've looked at the corridor on the west side, and I would subjectively disagree that I think that they're not visually unappealing to me as a person, not only who's lived here my whole life, but also as a professional. But I am also pro-development and feel that there needs to be some compromise to get greater densities here. I just want to know, has there really been a good study of that west side to try and see if there's a way to get you between where you and staff are? Because I really don't think it's an issue of anything more than getting the zoning information right, because this is a zoning issue. It's not about what the buildings are, all the rest. It's getting the rules of what this PD would be so that everybody's able to understand what you're trying to do. And I think from my standpoint, that's not clear, you know, and I think that's what we need to have happen.
I'm unaware if there's a study on the East Corridor. And, you know, looking at the site, I've done worked on some of those projects and familiar with them. It's a similar situation in that when you look at the uses that are adjacent to us and you look at the derelict buildings that have been vacant for years and years and years and the lots that are on this site that have been vacant for years, it's in need of redevelopment. It hasn't happened over all this period of time. And so, yes, there is not a policy position in the ordinance that currently exists for this corridor, but it aligns for a whole lot of other reasons. Whether the city would adopt that policy for an overall corridor or not, I don't know. What I've got is an individual property owner who wants to develop this or sell it to my client to develop the site, so that we can put a multifamily housing project there. And we thought that it would be very similar. It lines up very similarly, and kind of, I wanted to give our justification as to why we were targeting those same scales and the same, what the reasoning was for doing it. And we never asked for 8 stories. We asked for the DX. The project was always 5 stories, but one of the concerns of staff was, well, you could build 8. So we'd rather you do a plan development so that you're bound to what's in the specific for the specific project. So that's how we ended up back in the SPD with the 4-story and the 5-story.
Thanks. And I guess my question would be, even though it's derelict buildings there and the sites, that's been the case in almost every part of the city. It's been redeveloped, including the West Side Corridor. Even though it might not have been totally open sites, the buildings were in disrepair, and there really was a problem with trying to redevelop that area. So the new construction made sense. So I don't buy the argument just because there's not a lot on the site that the height becomes something that that's, you know, opened to a really large difference from what we've been trying to do historically here. I'm not a person who's against height, but I do feel that the scale of the existing neighborhood, even beyond where the derelict buildings are, does matter in that area. And the area up at Liberty Street is pretty far away from this site, even though it's on the same side, that they aren't visually related to each other as far as height is concerned. So I think that that height difference does matter that far apart.
Sure. And we will, it sounds like one way or another, although I suppose it may be denied too, but we may have a very comparable, basically same size project immediately adjacent to us across street from Gwinnett, which is currently under application.
I just want to speak to the process in which all of this has occurred. I mean, when things get to this body, we would like it to be as clean as possible that we can, so that we can make a sound judgment and fair determination. So it sounds as if there's been a lot of messing. To Mr. Cole's point, it would have been advantageous in this interest for in this instance for things to have been emailed, say exactly what it is. You know, there's some question about when things were submitted, there's some question about what's been submitted. And I think once we provide the information and make it basically irrefutable, I think it makes it a lot easier for the process to go through. That's for everybody across the board, staff, petitioner, and whomever else beyond staff, in order for everything to get to us in a clean package. That's where my biggest concern lies right now, because it seems like there's just so much back and forth about what was fairly done, what wasn't done, what was given, what wasn't given. And I think it's creating so much of a mess that is a little difficult to make a clean determination at the moment. And, you know, that's one of my biggest concerns, alongside with the idea of, you know, being very present-minded about the decision that's made for this project, considering that it could potentially be extremely precedent-setting for all of the other developments that of its kind that will come behind it. So,
I think, unfortunately, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to respond in on our side of the table. It's difficult to control what that process is and what that looks like. Obviously, I don't have any effect on what agenda gets delivered to you or what's on it. And in fact, I get to see it on Sunday before the hearing on Tuesday at 1:30. So it gives us essentially 24 hours to review and respond to the staff report and what's attached to that staff report, which doesn't exactly lend itself from our perspective to being able to, you know, respond back and whatever else. But again, we wanted to get to this process today for the very purpose of bringing some of these things to a head, which is why we asked to be here.
And I don't disagree with your position as far as it, you guys not having any real hand in it. But I would just say, if we adhere to, and not saying that you guys did not, I want to make that very clear, but if we simply adhere to when the deadlines and such are, then get that information in, then nobody has a leg to stand on and say that we didn't have the information, you know?
Let me just say this. It would be, highly unusual, maybe not the right word. It would be unusual for us to submit a zoning with a site plan through a PUD process for a hearing. Let's say the deadline was September 1st. And for that to not change between then and the date of the meeting.
Right.
Like, those things are regularly in flux. They're regularly changing up to the meeting. The question is, did we completely change our project and like do a, you know, sea change of what we were talking about? Or did we have a meeting, staff asked us to tweak things or relate some comments to us, and then we went back and tweaked those things and resubmitted them prior to the meeting? I think that kind of thing is what's happened here, and it happens a lot.
Right.
Whether that's right or wrong, I just wanted to make the statement that it's not something that's particular to us, I don't think. It's just something that happens.
No, agree. there's no more conversation or no more question for the petitioner, we're going to allow for the public comment so we can move this along. Is there anyone online? Okay, thank you. So we'll call Mr. Jim Hunsrucker. If you would, please come state your name for the record, and we'll give you 3 minutes, sir. Yes, sir.
I don't know who I am anymore. Yeah. What I had prepared is... Okay. So my name is Jim Hunsrucker. I am president of the Forsyth Park Community Alliance, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today. We have been in communication with the forum group about this project since March 2023. At the first meeting, we were told the project was not viable unless it was five stories. Profitable to who? Since that date, the project has gone through many modifications. This request for plan development seems to be their best shot to produce their profitable project on historic ground, which by this design has no respect for Savannah's vistas. They rely on small scale Savannah's vistas rely on small scale and open spaces that create the charm that draws visitors to Savannah. The five stories they pretend to hide in the skyline would be visible throughout the neighborhood, just like the emperor's new clothes. Now, I'm sure you have made yourself aware of the ordinances for plan development. In the first two paragraphs, it calls for the sensitivity to the character of the site and surrounding area, as well as to preserve environmental, historic, and cultural resources. The forum group plans for the demolition of five historic buildings. I see this as contrary to the ordinance. Instead, what has been offered is a plaque that memorializes a church, Bethel AME. Bethel AME was demolished in 2021 by the current property owner. Record shows the project area was developed in the 1870s during the reconstruction period as workman houses for the abutting Savannah, Florida and Western Railroad. The structure of workman houses and churches were made of wood, not the proposed brick exterior. The residents of the city block were African American, minus one German family who owned a corner store. Bethel AME was the touchstone for the community. As additional supporting evidence of the historic importance, I would like to introduce you to Margaret Gordon. Mrs. Gordon was born in 1832 into slavery. She owned 611 East Gwinnett Street as part of the history of this block, Gwinnett Street block. Ooh, did I go too far? Anyway, Miss Gordon purchased her home in 1876, the last year of reconstruction. We know Jim Crow began in 1877. She was head of household, widowed. She housed her niece and grandson, and she happened to die. She was a washerwoman who could not read or write. But Mrs. Gordon, she passed away, and more than her property abutted the Bethel AME Church. We hear a familiar dog whistle from the city leadership, Team Savannah. That whistle says we need to get ready for a huge influx of people, the Hyundai Horde, I call them. This is to justify a hurry up and build mentality.
Mr. Hunsrucker, give me a second. Due to the fact that we only have five cards, and at the beginning of the meeting, I did state that I would. That we would allow for the equal amount of time for the public to present as the petitioner.
Yes.
I'm going to allot you 3 more minutes.
Thank you, sir. So back to the Hyundai Horde. This is to justify a hurry up and build mentality, which is propaganda for allowing a to hell with the standards of appearance and to hell with the upholding of his historic values. Just build. This sacrifice of Savannah's sacred character, as suggested by city leadership, is an assault that has become the fighting words to so many residents who resist. Why should we, Savannah residents, allow yet another developer to dig its claws deep into our history and rip it away? To disregard our neighborhood that struggled to build itself during Reconstruction, that endured the Jim Crow era, who organized and rose again during the Civil Rights Movement, all for what? To have it erased to create a hyper-dense profit machine that fills the pockets of the already wealthy 1%. To them, it's not about doing what's right for the history. They perceive a small plaque to history as adequate pittance to the memory of what you, dear commission, of what you are being asked to destroy. Please deny this petition as recommended by the MPC staff. What I would like, in addition to that, what I would like to point out is one thing that is not on their site maps is this power station, power pole, substation. Also, parking, I would like, I've done a lot of parking studies in the, agreed upon by city manager. I know a lot about parking in our neighborhood. I've spent months studying, taking numbers, whatever. I'd like to point out that the power station gates have, there's three gates. They're about 10 foot wide. So that's along the south side of East Bolton Street, the 600 block. On the north side of the 600 block of East Bolton, there's approximately enough spacing for 10 parking spots. Now, a portion I don't have, and I can't show you on this map, but if you look in the lower right corner of the right picture, you'll see a section of the lane.
About 40 seconds.
And that would allow maybe five. So there, in all total in that immediate area, there's 15 parking spots due to the flow of traffic. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Denise Flojo. Did I pronounce it right? I hope.
Flojo.
Flojo, okay. Please state your name for the record. I'll give you 6 minutes.
Hi, I'm Denise Flojo, and I live in the Beach Institute neighborhood. So we are directly adjacent to this project, even though we didn't get notification other than Jim's group gave us notification back for the meeting. And there's another project you're all probably aware of that's on the other corner, directly north of this project. And as a resident, parking's already an issue. I live on East Huntington Street, where we have one-sided parking on that street. So we have a lot of one-story cottages, two-story homes. We don't have high buildings. We've got the Masons directly across the street, the church, and then the project that's coming up, and then this project we're talking about today on the opposite corner across from the Victorian District. And it is truly a neighborhood. It is one of the last affordable neighborhoods in the downtown historic district. And it kind of blends seamlessly across East Broad with our neighbors on the east side. It would be awful to have a height of 5 or 8 stories. It would be unbelievable. We as neighbors would not want that. And parking's already a big issue there, to the point where we get to park on the other side of the street for street sweep, right? Because we only have one-sided parking already. So between that and traffic flow with this project and the project that's coming up that wants almost another 100 affordable housing units, I've seen what the DX did over on Ann Street, the affordable housing for a 500-square-foot studio apartment is over 2,000 square feet. So I don't know if y'all think that's affordable, but in my book, that's not affordable because it goes up to 8,000 square feet in that new complex that they built. So I have a feeling that if we build it, they will come. Well, what comes, and I'm not against them, but SCAD students come and take over all these apartments. It's not families. It's usually SCAD students who come and rent these apartments. So it just allows SCAD to expand with more and more students. So thank you.
Thank you. Stephen, I don't want to mess your last name up. Could you,
that's all right.
Okay, would you please state your name for the record?
Stephen Thekenot.
Okay,
and,
I'll go try that.
That's fine. I live in the area that the representative, I guess, of the builder was saying that there are no neighbors. I live directly across the street on Gwinnett Street. My house is between Gwinnett Street and Gwinnett Lane, and a stone's throw from where they're going to be building this monstrosity. I personally think you should deny this application to change the zoning. I think that I agree with what Mr. Coleman said. There has to be some development. I'm not totally against it. I just think that this issue about the density is very, very important. And I think the gentleman who came actually started off by saying at some point he said that parking is going to determine the size. And well, where is your parking here? You're talking about some machine. I would never let my car be parked by a machine. But supposedly some machine is going to sort of park 200 cars, not addressing that is 200 cars for the 200 apartments they're trying to build in this area. All the commercial space is going to be restaurants and stores. Where are they going to park? So there is no parking on Broad Street, East Broad Street. There is no, and then you have to, there's no parking when you go down that ramp below the railroad tracks. So they're going to park on Gwinnett Street where I live. And then the other issue is, they have very conveniently taken Gwinnett Lane, which is only 20 feet wide, which is behind my house. And they have extended it across East Broad Street, doubled its size to make a huge East Gwinnett Lane between their two buildings. So what's going to happen? East Gwinnett Lane between Price Street and East Broad Street is going to be the next superhighway in Savannah. Why? Because all the traffic coming from their parking garage that they have currently put at the end of Gwinnett Lane is they're going to cut across Broad Street, go on to Gwinnett Lane to get to the west side. And why is that? Because there's no way that they can go south on East Broad. Because somebody in the city or whoever decided that the only north-south road in Savannah that suddenly becomes one way is going to be East Broad. And where does that happen? On Gwinnett Street. Suddenly at Gwinnett Street, East Broad becomes one way. So nobody can go south. So when they're exiting this new structure and they want to go south, they would have to make a right, then a left on Gwinnett Street, then go on to Price, and they'll go down south on Price. They're not going to do that. They're going to go straight down Gwinnett Lane. And they're going to go behind my house, which Gwinnett Lane is 20 feet. This is now suddenly going to be maybe 40, 50, 60 feet. I don't know how wide they're going to be, this new Gwinnett Lane between these two buildings. So I'm requesting, look, I understand that some building is going to go up there. It should only be three stories. The precedent is Park and Broad. Park and Broad has three floors. They, at some point, at some meeting, they said Park and Broad is 65 feet. It's not 65 feet. I've been trying to get Park and Broad to tell me how high they actually are. Three stories. That's all they should have. Three stories, 120 apartments, and then they have to fix this issue about Broad Street becoming one way East Gwinnett. So I don't know what the commission can do. If the commission can request the city, if you're going to do buildings there, and then, and like everybody mentioned, the historical African American theater that's going to be redone and then five-story buildings behind that, there's going to be a huge amount of traffic in that area. Parking is going to be a problem. And one of the biggest issues regarding that is all the traffic coming down south on East Broad, traffic coming down the Truman Parkway, heading west on East Gwinnett. All of them are going down Gwinnett Street because there's no other way. Suddenly it becomes one way. So please, can you figure out a way to not let them use Gwinnett Lane between Price Street and East Broad as the next superhighway in Savannah, number one. So make it either, figure out a way to make it some kind of a tenants only or local traffic only, or block that road. Don't allow them to create a Gwinnett Lane between their two buildings. I don't know how they can do that, but whatever it is. And then to request that East Broad at Gwinnett Lane is returned back to two ways. It cannot be left one way and no way for traffic to go except down Gwinnett Street, which increases the traffic, increases the noise. And then, of course, the issue, like I said before, parking. You cannot ignore parking. And please don't tell me that a machine is going to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is Ed Perch. If you would, please state your name for the record, and you have 6 minutes.
Hi, my name's Ed Perch, and I live at 539 East Gwinnett Street in a little crooked little house, a little one-story 1900s house. And I would just like to thank staff, Ed. I think he did a stellar job of presenting a pretty much airtight case over an incomplete submittal at this point for this development. And I recently saw the new submittal for keeping the zoning the same at the former theater with the new apartments. And they had a very simple site plan, and that's all that they submitted for a variance for height. But keeping the TC, 2 zoning, what they did was, for their underground parking, it showed a new right of way or a new road that connects a loop around there so that, they're opening up Entleman Street, I believe, and then they're going to continue a road alongside the railroad tracks and enter the parking garage from there. I think whatever development happens on, this, perfect, tithing lot. This is actually a perfect tithing lot. And oh, also, Ed, I wanted to say that I was a former staffer, so I realized the connection, but city staffer. I worked for the Development Services Department for a couple of years in the Design and Construction Department there. And the relationship between staff and the public is always an important one. And I feel like he's done a really great job in such a short period of time. But as well as everybody else on there, on the team has been really responsive to any emails or questions that we've asked. But I think what we have here is a perfect extension of, Oglethorpe's plan. I mean, this is a tithing lot. This, a typical tithing block is 300 feet, 560 foot by 90 foot lots. In this case, it's 110 by 314. Both of them, with a lane down the middle. I talked to city surveyor Gregory Harris, and he told me that the 15-foot unnamed right-of-way that's shown on the earlier Sanborn maps that parallels the railroad tracks here was still active. He said to call Eric Chin over at Real Property and see if he could verify if that's been sold or not. Eric said he didn't really know if it was the railroads or not, but I think there's still some, it sounded like in both parties that it's still unclear. I'm not sure, but there is a 15 foot on the old Sanborn maps. And if that could be the main entrance to this proposed parking garage, then that would make so much more sense than trying to take it in off of a one way and making East Gwinnett Lane one way and also blocking access to the 1951 church. I think that's just, inappropriate for the new development to be built over that 20-foot right-of-way of Gwinnett Street. Aside from that, if they could keep the TC2 zoning on this and limit the height to 3 to 4 stories, it sounds like what staff is suggesting is to basically reduce the density of this by half, the amount of units by half, and that would seem to make really decent sense and decent scale the whole project. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. All right. And lastly, Mr. Andrew Jones, 6 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Andrew Jones. I'm chair of the Oglethorpe Plant Coalition, a 501c3 organization devoted to protecting the downtown National Historic Landmark District. I'm a ninth generation Savannian and a resident of the downtown historic district. And my father grew up on East Gwinnett Street. I'd like to echo Mr. Cole's comment that a lot of studies have been referenced that haven't been produced here. Clearly, those are not part of the record for you to consider. And it's very interesting because Mr. McCorkle's own firm is taking that position in Superior Court. They're taking a position that's so severe that if it's an item that's not on the agenda, you're not allowed to consider it. So Mr. McCorkle might want to consult with his partner, Ms. Bolger, so that they can come here with the same standards.
Mr. Jones, do me a favor. Let's keep the comments at the issue. I don't want it to get into a contentious name calling.
Did not mean to be name calling. It had to do with procedural issues.
Gotcha. But let's okay. Isolate that. Thank
sure.
You.
But of course, I guess what did surprise me about the presentation we saw was frankly what I would call the bait and switch. And the fact is, you were told that this was a mirror of the MLK corridor, correct? And you were told that there were these 4 and 5 story buildings along the MLK corridor. Then he proceeded to provide a number of pictures of that corridor. You did notice that the buildings weren't 5 stories. They were all 3 and 4 stories. So I found that rather shocking. And it's key to this particular proposal. Please deny this application. Savannah does not need any more 5-story monolithic buildings. They are now a blight throughout the historic district. There is a reason these 5-story buildings are prohibited in many locations. These buildings rise above the tree canopy, unlike their 2, 3, and 4-story historic neighbors. As such, they can be seen from blocks away. This building, while just outside the district, will be visible from blocks from well within the district. While the West Side corridor has the 3 and 4 story buildings, there are now aberrations already on the Broad Street corridor, and they're awful. For example, looking east from Broughton and Habersham, one used to see just the historic rooftops and trees. And now you see what defines the skyline is a massive building. Like this structure, it lies east of Broad Street, just outside the district, but it's visible from one of the oldest parts of the district. These monolithic buildings are bad enough stylistically, but they will soon overwhelm the city, diminishing the presence of the historic buildings tourists come to see. But the worst part is that they rise above the most of the historic structures and tree canopy, making their ugly presence known to all. There's only one reason for this variance, and that's to satisfy the greed of the developers. Please be a good citizen and protect the city that we love. Please let civic pride triumph over greed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. We have no further public comments. Therefore, the floor is closed now, and the petitioner can respond to public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just be brief. Again, We're not seeking DX in this site, and I understand the comments that are coming, particularly about the height and the idea that the historic districts are also encompass the areas that can be seen from the historic district. We're not inside any of these historic districts. We're not inside of the Forsyth Park Plan Group's area either. But we did communicate with them, and we did send them copies of what we had submitted to the commission in advance of the meeting. So we've been in communication. We're not trying to hide what we're trying to do. We may have a fundamental disagreement about whether or not a 4 and 5 story building is offensive or not, but it depends on your perception, I suppose, of that 4 or 5 story building. We continue to take the position that if all we can have is 3 stories throughout the city, then we're never going to meet our housing requirements. And so we have to look for specific places where we believe that some height and some mass is appropriate. And we believe this being outside the district and with the property around it, this is a good place forward, and we continue to take that position. With that, I'm going to say that perhaps the best thing for us to do as far as proceeding from here, which I guess is the big question, is to continue the petition so that we have the ability to continue and re-meet with Edward and staff and try to address the things that can be addressed. I can't stand here and promise you today that we're going to be able to address everything and staff's going to say we love the project and it's great to move forward. I don't know that we're ever going to get to that place. But there are certain things in here that are talked about missing, like the parking plan and other things that we may have a disagreement about whether or not it's been submitted. And we don't want to be in a context of having disagreement about things like that. I want y'all to have a full package. We do. We want this process to move forward, which is part of the reason we be on this agenda today, is to get to this point. And so with that, I would just say that I would suggest that we continue it so that things like cannabis usages can be struck and STVRs can be struck and we can blast parking plans and all of the seemed confusion between us and staff can be resolved to the extent it can be resolved. And then I would ask that when we come back to that date certain, whether that's, I mean, I guess October 17th is the next meeting, but that when we come back, that
we're going to get to a point where we've got to take a vote one way or another, because I don't know that we're ever going to have a staff recommendation for approval, but we do want to at least clear up as many discrepancies as we can.
Okay. We appreciate it. Do you feel that October 17th is enough time to do what you need to do? Is the real question. If the board were to vote for a continuance. And that's my biggest concern, making sure everything can actually get submitted and reviewed. I don't know if October 17th, but I can't dictate what you guys feel is.
There may be changes to it that occur after the deadline for submittal. Obviously, the deadline for that submittal has already happened, but it's not unusual for us to continue petitions to a next meeting. Yeah. It happens all the time as long as it's a date certain. So I guess the question is we've got, what, October 17th and then what, November 7th?
October 28th.
October.
November, sorry.
November 7th.
I think there's only one meeting in October, right?
Right.
So I guess our options are to do it to October 17th, and then if we don't feel like we're going to get there, we can table it to the 7th, so we try to keep it moving. I want to try to keep it moving is my biggest concern, but if we don't get there before the 17th, then we're not going to get there. But I see Edward shaking his head, so he may have a different opinion.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. If there's nothing for the petitioner, we'll entertain a motion.
Just a little discussion.
Are we going?
Yeah, I think that what it appears to me is that for the most part, the public is open to development, but there is an issue with density. And by right, they could build 120 units now. By request, they're trying for 200. And so I think that whatever comes back before us, in my mind, and I'm not saying this will be the will of the board, but in my mind, it would fall somewhere between those two. So just something for the petitioner to consider, and also to consider development to the south is 3 stories and development to the north is 5 stories. So maybe somewhere between those 3 stories and 5 stories, there could be an understanding. Maybe a 3-story setback to 4 stories instead of the 4-story setback to 5. Something where both sides feel like they've achieved something for the community. From the petitioner's side, more density, lower rents, theoretically. And from the community side, less of an eyesore, less of something that stands out like a sore thumb. That's all I'd say.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Coleman?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I want to seek some clarification on what's going to be brought back in front of us. Are we going to see another site plan document? Are we going to see a zoning document? Because what I want to see is a zoning document. I think that that's what we need to see. We need to see what the parameters of any building is going to be, that then the design team or whatever can work within those parameters. But I think it will allow this commission to really understand what we're trying to get to and not talk about all the other issues of parking specifics or whatever. What's the parking ratios, the type of information that would be under a zoning classification right now is what this plan development needs to give us for its specifics and not the rest of it. And then let the petitioner, if they're successful in getting a change, create the buildings that go through all the other approvals done by those appropriate authorities. So I just want to make sure we're able to drill down on what we need to do as a commission and leave all the rest of that to the persons who are supposed to do it. And I think a zoning document is what we need and from there. So
I would agree. Ms. Jarrett.
I think a zoning document would be very helpful. The commission has the ability to grant some variances on its own, don't we?
Yeah.
That may be worth exploring.
I'm sorry, if I could. Okay, so to answer your question, Commissioner Jarrett, that is correct. Site plan variances do come before this board. My request specifically to deny this particular petition is so that it can be brought back as one complete document. This is not, again, nothing you saw today was an assessment of what actually is the substance of the petition. What you saw was really sort of a procedural issue, where in the beginning things were admittedly not really done the way they should have been done. And so what I want is one complete submission that comes in. It is very common that we get those by the deadline and I see the petitioner at meeting day. We have gotten so many different iterations of this and that. Things came out in SPR that we had never seen before. we want one complete submission packet. So again, my request is not based on any feelings that one way or the other about the substance of this petition, but just the request that it be brought back as a complete package for evaluation like any other petition.
I have a question for staff relative to the comment on SPR. Is an SPR review required for a planned development? I mean, is that a part of that process? Because I know a planned development can be an actual plan, or it can be sort of a document of what will create a plan. So what are we getting here is really what I'm saying. So if we're looking to create a site plan specific plan development, then yes, I would say there's some value to a SPR process. If not, why are we letting that cloud the issue unless that's a part of the process? So I'm trying to get that clarified here for us.
Thank you so much for that question. It is absolutely critical, again, that not only I convey to you, but to the petitioner. When that application comes in, it comes in with a request for something specific. It's a door, if you will. What he is asking for is a plan development that has particular guidelines that can be found here in the ordinance. There are very specific guidelines about what is required. Now, what I can find out for you is whether or not we've done tons of these since 2019. There are previous iterations of them. Again, the SCAD site is one of them. The new PD requirements, I can't say that I have knowledge in the time that I've been here that we've dealt with one. This is the first one I've seen. And so the best way to actually meet the requirements of this and ensure that a planned development, a non-impracticable planned development is what's on the paper in front of you is to send that through the SPR. It was as weird as it sounds like. I had to almost plead with the city staff to look at this because it was coming from me and not the petitioner. And that is uncommon. But again, I haven't dealt with one of these and I have not seen one in my sort of time looking through the file history. So yes, I do believe it is absolutely necessary. And I don't think this is an overstep for this particular kind of request.
Mr. Morrow, we hear what you feel is necessary and we may not disagree, but is it required?
Based on my reading of the ordinance, it is required.
Do we have a legal opinion on that?
I mean,
the ordinance is right there in front of you. That's what he pulled up, and it talks about having.
So in your legal opinion, is it required?
I'm not saying a legal opinion. Right. I'm reading the ordinance, and the ordinance says it's required.
So, based off of that, Mr. Morrow, and your reading of this information, where on that document that's pulled up would we make a determination that it's required versus encouraged?
Right. So anybody who's familiar with the regular development plan process knows that Section 3.5.4, I believe, there's a section that references general development plans and the requirements that any of these reviewing departments are looking at on any plan that's submitted. I would say that these are very reminiscent when you look at 6.1.17, which identifies all the very specific things that must be on this general development plan. Again, the idea is it needs to show that these things are practicable so that when they are approved, you're not giving zoning to something that can't be done. When they go through that practice at a later date, this is for something that presumably already has zoning, or it is often determined during the course of that process that it needs to be brought before you for a variance of some sort or for a rezoning. So because this is a planned development, and if you'll think back to the previous staff meeting, I kind of started talking about this sort of three different approaches, the carte blanche approach to zoning in the previous pre-meeting. Carte blanche, you get zoning. There's already certain uses and standards that are associated with those rezonings. The next step would be conditional zoning, which is typically what we're talking about. And so, honestly, I think there's been some misunderstanding on the part of the petitioner. I'll call it misunderstanding, that this is not conditional zoning. This is planned development. Planned development comes through, and it's more or less, this is what you're going to do. It's a different level. So again, if that's not what he wants, again, I was not here at the time this application was taken, but I'm more than glad to go back to the DX phase and say, how can we work within the context of a DX? How can we work within go through another door, if you will? The ordinance is going to point you to whatever those particular requirements for your request are. And it is my hope to convey to you as well as to the petitioner, staff's evaluation is always based on these requirements as set forth very clearly in the ordinance.
Mr. Chairman.
Question for staff.
Mr. Morrow, how do you interpret the first line of 6.1?
Narrative discussing the market
no,
concept.
No, sir. The first line of the first paragraph.
The city manager or his designee, the city manager of his or her designee may eliminate these requirements that do not apply.
So I think my issue here is that we're again talking about process steps and not outcomes. And I don't want to make this petition about process steps like has happened before on Buckhalter Road and other things, because I think we have a really important policy decision before us to make, because I do think it'll be a precedent setting development in the corridor. And I think that the neighborhood brings up items that need to be addressed. The petitioner brings up items that need to be addressed. And so I completely respect staff's determination to make sure that we put the process in the right buckets. I absolutely agree with that. This petition has been working its way. I've been hearing about this development in some form or fashion for almost a year in the process. And I know that at some point there was some approval on the part of MPC staff with the direction that the petitioner was making. And I understand that some changes have happened and I completely respect those changes and the petitioner needs to respect those changes. But I'm trying to find a way in which we can make sure that we're addressing the meat of the concern, because once we clear these process steps up, we still have a policy decision to make. And whether or not the petitioner is able to satisfy the needs of staff in terms of its next submittal, and without having to make a determination on this application, but be able to amend an application, or if you need the city manager office to be able to exercise authority as it relates to this, this ordinance to make that possible, that might be something we can consider to make sure that we're not creating new process steps in order to correct process steps that need correcting in this take. So that's just a suggestion, because I do appreciate you wanting to put this in the right path and process. I think that's absolutely needed. But if there's a way that we can avoid new processes to correct processes that need to be corrected, maybe we can go that route.
Sure.
Okay.
To that point, I just urge that we correct the necessary process. Yeah, but we'll entertain the motion. I think we've talked this one quite a bit.
Coles, I'd like to make a motion that we table this issue.
Continue
this issue, sorry, until the November 7th meeting, and that's specifically because March is the second busiest month of the Savannah calendar, and I don't see it realistically coming before us on the 17th. So that's my motion to November 7th.
Can we give specific points that we want addressed? Because right now they're just out there. Are we talking mass? Are we talking? I just feel like we're sending them back to the same table.
I think the petitioner has.
I'll second the continuance.
I was going to say, I think the petitioner has given pretty clear indication that he has, or they have, more than they had when they came in here. I could be in error in speaking that, but I think the whole objective for coming here today was to get the conversation that we had today. And if that is indeed the case, I would think that the petitioner not only wanting to move their project along, but actually getting completely out of this process I would hope that they would come back with things that we discussed specifically in here, in the continuous without having to stipulate. Now, unless there's some type of restriction or something like that that we are talking, that's a completely different story. But I don't, given the nature of it being a continuance, I don't think that's anything that we would necessarily want to apply at this time. Any discussion on the motion? So the motion is on the floor made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah to continue the petition to the November 7th meeting. We'll entertain the vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman.
Yes.
Mr. Coles.
Yes.
Ms. Epstein.
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett.
Yes.
Mr. Kegler.
Yes.
Mr. Melder.
Yes.
Mr. Noah.
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody.
Yes.
And Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin may be online too.
Do we have somebody online? We do. Mr. Irvin? Mr. Irvin, are you online?
Yes.
If you are, is your vote yes?
To continue.
Thank you, sir. All right, I too vote yes. Motion carries and the project is continued to the November the 7th meeting. Thank you. All right. So we move on to the next item on the agenda. That is regular business. There is none listed. We'll move on to the next item, which is presentations. There are none listed. And then in other business, we'll move on to the Coastal Empire Resilience Network, building a network of regional resilience plan. Mr. Morrow?
I apologize. Anna will be presenting online.
Okay.
Virtually.
Okay. Can she drive online? Can she drive the
Sally's
presentation?
Sally's
going to drive?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, this is Anna McCory. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, fantastic. So I'll just say next slide when we're ready to move on. But hi, everyone. My name is Anna McCory, and I'm a planner here at the MPC. I think I've met you all a couple of times. And so just thank you for allowing me to present the Coastal Empire Resilience Network, building a network for regional resilience, presentation of findings of our CERN Coastal Incentive Grant today. I'll probably take about 5 or 6 minutes of your time. Next slide, please. So what is the Coastal Empire Resilience Network? So hopefully you're familiar with it, but if you're not, the MPC or Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission, we applied for a grant through the Georgia Department of Natural Resources Coastal Resources Division in 2020, and we were awarded this grant. The mission of CERN is to engage regional community partners, municipal staff, and policymakers to coordinate equitable strategies to address the physical, economic challenges coastal Georgia communities face due to a changing climate. And so what are the benefits to local jurisdictions? Why would we want a resilience network? So we can have a greater collaboration through a coastwide network to promote resiliency, creation of a forum for information, data, and experiences to promote community resilience and develop a common framework for planning for resilience, and strengthening the ability of the region to prepare, adapt, and respond to both short-term and long-term complex climate and weather-related challenges. So it can be very, very beneficial. And next slide, please. I just want to define resilience while we're talking about it this afternoon. So that would be the ability to prepare and plan for, absorb, recover from, and more successfully adapt to adverse events. So this is a little bit different than sustainability, which thinks about how can we use, you know, our resources today and also have those resources in the future. Resilience is more about being able to come back from these adverse events stronger because we know that it's going to happen. So a little bit of a timeline of events. Next slide, please. In 2020, as I said, we applied for our grant. And in 2021, we established our steering committee, created our website, coastalempireresilience.org. And we created a Resiliency 101 course with the UGA Carl Vinson Institute of Government and presented that at multiple conferences, including the Georgia Municipal Association 2021 Annual Convention, Department of Resource, Coastal Resource Division 2021 Climate Conference, and the Chatham County Climate Change and Sea Level Rise Symposium. In 2022, we actually had our first meeting, so about 75 to 100 people attended. And so these are people that we want to partner with to build our network. And it was a day-long process. It was pretty cool to see. And we hosted multiple resilience coffee hours throughout the year once a month virtually and learning about different topics. And then in 2023, we had a SCAD intern create the Wonderful, Wonderful World of Resiliency activity book. We established our technical advisory committee. We had our second partner meeting just a few weeks ago, and we had about 40 attendees. And here we are at our grant findings presentations now. So next slide. So just want to show you a recap of some of these activities. This is a graphic visual from Inky Brittany from our 2022 partner meeting showing some highlights here. So what this was, it was more of a learning and discovering, visioning type meeting where we heard from many presenters about different aspects of resiliency on the Georgia coast. And then came up with a 2050 vision as well for what we would like the coastal empire to look like, and had a very diverse range of organizations represented as well. Next slide, please. For our resilience coffee hours, these were virtual and hosted over Zoom or Teams, and they covered a variety of topics from insect vectors, property insurance rates, extreme heat, DEI, natural infrastructure, hydrology on South Low Island, historic preservation, and shorebird conservation. These presentations had 20 to 60 people attend online and further knowledge about different topics in resiliency. Next slide. Great. And that brings me to our 2023 partner meeting. As I said, it was just a few weeks ago. You may have seen some promotion for this, but we were revisiting our mission, scope, and goals. We had our roundtable discussion format with table moderators, a very select list of questions that we really wanted our partners to get to and answer and think about how can we move forward past the end of our Coastal Incentive Grant this month. And so, a few of those outcomes and what we're going to be working towards in the future, we would like to continue to network within the entire coastal Georgia and Lowcountry South Carolina region. However, really focusing on Bryan, Bullock, Chatham, Effingham, and Liberty counties, and then expand out along with coordinating with the Golden Isles Coastal Resilience in Glenn County. We'd like to continue our mission of building a network to connect stakeholders and promoting coordination on equitable resilience strategies. Continue to increase awareness of CERN, educational opportunities, and engagement of elected officials. Create a strategic plan, offer an online hub of resources, contact list to assist partners in connecting. And we'd really like to focus on building relationships with community organizations and neighborhood associations with a focus on promoting social and environmental justice. And finally, we'd still like to work towards becoming maybe a self-sustaining organization. And we're still exploring these, but options thrown out from our partners were modest membership dues, incorporation into city and county budgets, and grants. Next slide, please. Great. And I also wanted to preview our Resiliency 101 course. So if you are interested or know anybody that is interested in learning more about how they can get their hands on our Resiliency 101 course or have a presentation, a couple of the learning objectives are to learn how to define resiliency in its communities and managing land, discussing the difference between shocks and stressors, learning how to assess and plan for resilience, increasing resilience by strengthening the triple bottom line, building partnerships and understanding about resiliency, specifically in the Georgia coastal region. And this was all thanks to, next slide, NOAA in the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, Coastal Resources Division. So we really want to acknowledge them and thank them for their support throughout this grant process. We kind of done it. And then again, the UGA Carl Vinson Institute of Government help prepare our Resiliency 101 course along with the Network for Engineering in UGA IRIS. Next slide, please. So with that, I'll end and just say thank you very much for being part of this process and allowing me to present today. So we'd love for you to stay connected with CERN. You can do that on Instagram at CERN_MPC or going to our website, coastalempireresilience.org. And thanks again to the leadership of Melanie Wilson, our executive director at the MPC. And again, you can contact myself, the project lead for CERN, at Macquarie@themPC.org. So with that, I'll end. And again, thank you. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Anna. Does anybody have any questions for Anna? All right. Good to go. We appreciate it. All right. So we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is the election of the officers of 2024. I could be in error, but if I could have somebody from the nominating committee run the slate again, I think I feel like there may be a typo, but I do know it was just for treasurer. So I will say that we have recorded that there's been a nomination for chairperson for myself and Ms. Karen Jarrett. Then we go vice chair, Mr. Travis Coles. Secretary, Mr. Wayne Noah. Tom Wild, what he was, I thought so. Just wanted to make sure because I had a different note on the slate that I have here and I just wanted to confirm. Yeah, that's what I thought, but I couldn't remember because I don't have my notes right here. Ms. Everett, if you would help me, execute the process properly, because I think the previous time that I was here to cast a vote, it was we wrote it down, and my understanding is that is not how we are supposed to do it.
Correct. It's supposed to be verbal.
Okay. So with that being said, we'll go ahead, and I think the best way to do it is I'll just state the candidate, I suppose, or the nominee, and then if you would raise your hand and say yes. Does that make sense?
That'd be fine. Call the candidate's name and take a vote on that particular candidate. So if you want to start.
It doesn't matter. I think.
Well, you can do a verbal vote.
All right, so we'll just start straight at the top. We'll go chair, and we'll go like this. There's no ill feelings or anything, anybody. So just relax. Don't be worked up. Ms. Amick, for myself?
No.
Okay, so that's Ms. Jarrett. Ms. Bowles is absent. Mr. Coleman? Myself or Ms. Jarrett? Okay. Mr. Coles?
Ms. Jarrett.
All right. Ms. Epstein?
Jarrett.
Okay. Mr. Irvin? Mr. Stevens or Ms. Jarrett? Is he still on there?
I'm here.
With asking your vote for chair, is it myself or Ms. Jarrett?
I would go with the nominating committee. I think they nominated, whoever they nominated, that's who I'm going with, who they nominate.
Okay, so that's Ms. Jarrett.
Okay.
What did he say? It sounds as if he said whatever the nominating committee's, like, based off of the slate.
Question, Ms. Jarrett.
Yes, sir.
I wasn't aware that. So did the nominating committee recommend a slate?
Yes, last meeting.
Okay, I'm sorry. I missed the last
meeting. Yeah, no worries.
I'm sorry.
Ms. Jarrett, I'm assuming you're voting for Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Kegler?
Ms. Stevens.
Thank you. Mr. Melder?
Mr. Stevens.
Mr. Noah?
Mr. Stevens.
Mr. Notrika is absent. I too will vote for myself. Mr. Wildwoody?
Ms. Jarrett.
All right. And Mr. Welch?
Mr. Stevens.
All right. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 votes for Mr. Stevens and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 votes for Ms. Jarrett. So that settles chair. Move on to the vice chair. I suppose we'll just ask yes. Because we only have one nominee, and that's Mr. Travis Cole. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Coles? Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin? Yeah, we'll go with it.
Thank you.
He seems it. I think he's voting the slate. I don't want to speak for him, though, because this is an actual voting process. So I'll jump over him for a second. Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
I vote yes. Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
All right, good deal. All right, so we move on to treasurer. Mr. Wildwoody is the sole nominee. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Wait a minute. He's not. You got Wayne Noah.
Well, I had Mr. Noah from his it shows as secretary.
Secretary was you and Mr. Noah.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to get clarification on the slate before we did it.
I had nominated Mr. Wywoody for secretary. And you were nominated for secretary. And Lorene Bowles was nominated for treasurer.
I was relying on the information that was provided by staff on recording from the last meeting.
Ms. Jarrett, I gave him a piece of paper that was written from the last time when Ms. Bowles presented the people. So that's where he got that from. He was originally put on there as a treasurer. And then after that was presented, then he was also nominated to keep his seat as chair. So he's kind of on both spots.
I thought Ms. Bowles was nominated as treasurer.
She was.
Uh-oh.
There was a lot of discussion in the end, so there could be confusion, but that's where Mr. Stevens is coming.
Well, we have two other members of the nominating committee here, so.
That's what I'm trying to get, yeah.
Chair of the nominating committee, her email to us.
Okay.
After much discussion was the slate from.
Yes.
From
the nominating session.
President or Chair Karen, Vice Chair Travis, Secretary Wayne Noah, Treasurer Lorene Bolt.
All right, so.
That's what
I remember.
So Wayne Noah and Bowles, that's from the nominating committee.
And I nominated Mr. Wywoody as secretary.
You nominated Wywoody as secretary. So, all right. And I don't recall being nominated for any other seat than chair. So if I'm in error, please let me know. Unfortunately, I do not have all of the notes prior to. I was leaning heavily on the previous minutes. So.
Correct.
That's the only thing that I recall being nominated for. All right. So with that being said, we'll back up, start over on treasurer, and that is Mr. Noah, correct? So from the nominating committee, there was nobody else that was nominated from the floor for treasurer, correct? And then I'll
Bowles
get into.
Ms. Bowles was nominated for treasurer.
I thought Ms. Bowles was nominated for secretary.
Mr. Noah is on the committee.
But he specifically just said Ms. Bowles was nominated for secretary from their slate.
Is that what you said, Mr. Noah?
Bowles for treasurer. I blame the Russians.
Lord have mercy.
Or the Chinese.
I second that.
So one more time, please.
For secretary?
Correct.
From the nominating committee, Wayne Noah?
Correct.
Treasurer? From the nominating committee, Lorene Bowles.
Correct.
You'll have to go from the floor or the minutes from the nomination.
I don't know if the minutes caught it. Cause that's why we're back and forth now.
Well, secretary is Wayne Noah.
That's directly from the nominating committee. There's really no more discussion on that. For secretary, there was a nomination from the floor. I'm understanding for Mr. Wildwoody. Correct. All right. That's where it is. That's what we're voting.
So it should be between Noah and
Wildwoody. No, it should not be between Noah and Wildwoody. It should be treasurer should be for Noah, period. Secretary between Bowles and Wildwoody.
Secretary.
I just twisted.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Secretary from the slate was Wayne Noah and from the slate treasurer was Lorene.
Yes.
You know, that's right. I will absolutely own that because the order, I apologize, the order in which is on the sheet is flipped. So I flipped it. I apologize. Thank you. So Noah and Wildwoody. Gee whiz.
Being recorded.
Unfortunately.
Yes, it's being recorded.
Unfortunately. So. Straight treasurer, Lorene Bowles, correct?
Yes.
Cool. Ms. Amick, how do you vote? Mr. Coleman. Correct. Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Urban? I think you tapped out. Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notreek? Nope, not here. Mr. Stevens? Yes. Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
Mr. Welch? All right. So here we go.
In the same agreement by some council about some nominee, the next nominee.
Can we mute them? I don't know who that is. Yeah, we'll need to mute them. So let's move on. Secretary, we'll just go straight down. Since Mr. Wildwoody is sitting right here. Oh, Mr. Wild, this is Wildwoody and Noah, excuse me. So we'll go Mr. Noah, since he came from the slate. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman? We vote for secretary. Vote Mr. Wildwoody or Mr. Wildwoody or Mr. Noah.
I did too. Yeah. So what's the yes for?
Yes or no.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Mr. Coles?
Mr. Noah.
Ms. Epstein?
Noah.
Ms. Jarrett?
Why would he?
Mr. Kegler?
Noah.
Mr. Melder?
Mr. Noah.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
For Mr. Noah, okay. I go Mr. Wildwoody. Mr. Wildwoody?
Wildwoody.
And Mr. Welch?
Noah.
All right, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 for Noah. 1, 2, 3, 4 for Mr. Wildwoody. So the vote ends up, the slate now reads as Chair, Ms. Karen Jarrett, Vice Chair, Mr. Travis Coles, Secretary, Mr. Wayne Noah, and Treasurer, Ms. Bowles. Yeah, and I just will serve as past chair emeritus. Yeah. So that wraps that up. I've appreciated serving as the chair. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Good job, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
And one last thing before we get out, I will not go into specifics, but if you guys would keep the executive director in your prayers, she's on the mend. So just wanted to put that out there and make the body privy to said information and make that request. All right. If nothing else, accept the meeting, motion to adjourn.
Yes. Before you, is there going to be a
let me back
session
up.
Or a personnel meeting?
We will need to do a personnel committee meeting prior to the next meeting when the next officers take their seats. Okay. Because we are still trying to collect full participation of the executive director's evaluation. I have 6. I think just got 7. So, all right, thank you. If we can get those evaluations in so that we can all get a fair. Yeah, we'll send it to you. I wasn't sure. Do the city and the county typically evaluate? Okay. All right, cool. So I'll send it to you guys. I don't think you all were copied in on the original email. I'll make sure you all have it this evening. I'll send staff an email as to when we should probably get together on this personnel meeting to go through the reviews. Hopefully I can put a ribbon on this thing by the end of the week. All right. Thank you. Motion to adjourn.
Coles.
All right. So move.